Thank you.
Gee. That's a little dark. Here, you'll read this in your record.
You're live.
I'll get upset.
Okay.
Good morning. Welcome to the August 12th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. If you would all please stand and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you read changes to the agenda, please?
You have several changes to today's agenda. Under the consent agenda, you have an added item, A22. This is introduction of an ordinance amending Chapter 8.23 of the County Code to require the licensure of tobacco retailers and amending the county fee schedule to establish a fee for the ordinance. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of hearing date set for August 26, 2008 at 9 a.m. You have an amended hearing item, item C2, hearing to consider an ordinance amending County Code Chapter 8.12.735, health and sanitation, solid waste services, increasing the maximum solid waste collection franchise period from 10 to 15 years. This item was introduced on August 5, 2008. Recommendation is for approval. Staff is requesting this item be amended by replacing page 1 of the ordinance to correct a minor clerical error. Replacement page is attached for your approval. You have an added item to close session. Under pending litigation, you have items 29, County of San Luis Obispo versus Level 3 Communications, LLC, and item 30, Da Silva versus County of San Luis Obispo. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements, and that's your changes for today.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. I'll open it to public comment on items on the consent agenda, and I do have one request to speak. Item A22, Mr. Gary Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Gary Fowler, and I live on Mill Street in the city of San Luis Obispo. I've lived in the city and the county for over 40 years, and I specifically live in District 5. I would hope that this board would table any discussion yet on another unwanted and unnecessary tax against the business community of San Luis Obispo County. There's already plenty of wasted revenue generated by the tobacco settlement monies, Proposition 10 monies, and a whole host of other grant monies, both from the federal government and the state, to the county, which is directed towards advertising and other educational programs for minors in using of tobacco products. If minors or juveniles want to acquire tobacco products, intervention and monitoring by the parents certainly is the most enforceable way to prevention. Education in the school probably is the next. Already minors as well as adults can order over the internet tobacco products at a cheaper rebate than we are offering them here. In most instances, certainly than they will pay in California. No questions of age are asked. They can buy them from other bordering states, often with no challenges of age also. If they want, they can purchase them on most military installations from the PX at 17 years of age. You're going to add several hundred dollars onto existing businesses, which will be added not only to the tobacco sales, but probably other products in their stores as well, to offset any expense for taxing. There are already laws on the penal code and the health and safety code that give law enforcement what they need to cite those using and are furnishing tobacco products to minors. This is yet another ordinance that's not necessary. They'll certainly be used to pay time and a half overtime for officers that are working with the county personnel. This is nothing more than another form of extortion by trying to regulate something that should be a parental supervision problem and one of education, if the minor wants to comply at all. At a time when we don't know what kinds of additional taxes the legislature may place upon us and the business community, what funds they may withdraw, or what changes they may make in the laws, I suggest we table any action on this until after the state budget is passed. We don't need to wreak further havoc on the economy with yet another financial obligation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. That was my last request to speak on items on the consent agenda, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if there are any items they would like to speak to. Supervisor Ovid.
A22, separate vote.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson?
I'll participate in the discussion of A22.
Okay. Supervisor Sajian?
Been taken care of.
Okay.
Good up.
Okay, very good.
I'll move to approve the remainder of the agenda items.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda, sans A22. Madam Clerk, roll call.
Mr. Sajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Okay, item A22, Supervisor Ovid?
Just two items on this. One is, I think that this is regulated and it's also controlled under the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I'm still not satisfied with the language about consumption of food on premises, where it says the only business. And I think some of the things that were said earlier by the public, I just believe that I don't see where we have to go into this enforcement thing when it's already being done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I look at it slightly differently, and I do believe this is a way of holding retailers accountable and lessening the likelihood that tobacco gets in the hands of minors. I did notice in the matrix that was provided, not part of the ordinance, but in the staff report, the matrix, one of the discussions we had last time this came around, was to try to make this similar to ordinances that were elsewhere in the county, so there wasn't any great discrepancy. And I appreciate Ms. Hughes and whoever else worked on that bringing this all together. It looks like we're fairly consistent. I think there are a couple things that this ordinance is proposing that would be useful to return to the cities to see if they wanted to add to theirs. But the one thing I did notice was sort of in the middle of the table, going back to Supervisor Ovid's question of establishments selling food, that our ordinance regulates restaurants only, where the city ordinances regulate restaurants and bars. And I'd like to float for my colleagues the idea that we might modify to make that part of our ordinance consistent with the incorporated cities, that we extend this licensure to bars as well as restaurants. I think the language is pretty clear about restaurants being different from places like convenience stores where incidental consumption on premises might occur.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Sajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like to see a fairness that those of us who operate our businesses in the city, that we're not overtaxed by those who operate their businesses in the county. And City of Fort Grande, where my business are, we've been paying this additional tax of $280-some that covers the expenses for their undercover operations. We keep talking about retailers, and I don't want to focus on them as them being the bad folks, because obviously their business is operated by employees and other folks. I hope that the penalty is not just to the retailer, but also to the person who's selling the product and also to the person who's purchasing the product. So we all feel the pain rather than just go after an individual. I have owning a convenience store, and the reason I don't have a conflict because they're all within the city of Fort Grande and none of them are within the unincorporated areas. I like to see the language somehow clarify that convenience stores do sell ready-made sandwiches. That's food, and that can be misinterpreted by an officer who's in charge of conducting an investigation of sort.
Thank you, Supervisor Sajian. Supervisor Linthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The
the comments, I don't want to repeat the same things been said, but I do think there's value in having ordinance language that is the same for all cities. And when I reviewed the matrix, there's still three areas. The second category here where San Luis doesn't use the same language, and toward the bottom here, the service display of tobacco products, and also provides for suspension and revocation. I can probably say everyone may have a different interpretation of what they think the fine, penalty, or assessment should be, but it really makes sense to me that what we're going to do should be consistent throughout the county. And there are people that own several businesses. I think there's just an understanding that they don't want to have to think or say, well, wait a minute, this business is different. So I was hoping that we could get language that was in almost lockstep with what the city's approved. And those were the three areas that I saw in the matrix that I thought that we were going to work on, and I was surprised when I read them that we didn't make a lot of progress, I guess, in that area. So I was curious what my colleagues thought. But to me, consistency is the key here. And I think if we can come up with consistent language, I certainly want to support this, but I just don't think we're there right now.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson?
You know, I believe consistency is a good idea, but I think there are a couple ways to get there. And I think one of them is for us to set a standard here and go back and suggest to the cities that they adopt similar standards. And we can walk through, you know, the individual points here. Were you pointing at the paraphernalia provisions, Supervisor Lenthal?
No, I didn't get into that one. I talked about the ordinance probably, no, category two or box number two, where San Luis doesn't have that particular section. And then two from the bottom, prohibits any self-service display on tobacco products, goes beyond state law, where San Luis isn't, so there's an inconsistency there. And then the fine or the suspension. It would seem to me that if, for no other reason, similar to ABC fines and everything else, that this ought to be a standard fine schedule, that it wouldn't really matter if you got a violation or a citation in Grover Beach or in the county or San Luis Obispo, that the penalty phase should all be the same.
And where are you looking at the fine schedule?
Provide, well, it's just right for suspension and then revocation. It doesn't say fine. I'm talking about the Grover Beach's box is blank unless my matrix is
right. How about the idea of extending ours to cover bars, as do the other cities? Are you amenable to that? Yeah. So
I certainly am, and I would actually, before we take action, I'd like to ask Jeff Hamm, our health agency director, to come up and speak to some of the issues, because he and I did talk about this, and I think consistency is extremely important, and I know that Ms. Hughes and her staff made an effort to make it consistent, but it's an evolving process, and the way it was described to me is that these other cities have their ordinance, and they've been in place for a while, and we've actually evolved to a more comprehensive, I think, better stated ordinance, and they haven't caught up to that yet. They haven't made the changes. So I don't know that we can always guarantee that we'll be 100% consistent simply because the cities have jurisdictions over themselves and they'll do what they want to do. But I do think that the effort was made since our meeting last week to make it as consistent as possible. And Mr. Hamm, if you could speak to the concerns of my colleagues here relative to consistency and then the fine schedule as well.
Thank you, Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. It was the first point I was going to make. You just talked about the sort of evolutionary nature of public policy relative to efforts to further regulate tobacco product sale, consumption, use. City of San Luis Obispo is well known for being on the cutting edge of that developing policy by prohibitions that it enacted initially out of the entire country on use of tobacco products in business environments. And a lot of the country, in fact, a lot of the world has come around to that way of thinking as well. The ordinance is based on a model, and as you pointed out, Supervisor Patterson, it's been implemented chronologically by these individual jurisdictions at their discretion, within their discretion. Not all the cities have enacted them. I'm not exactly sure if this was the order in which they were enacted, but they were enacted in order. They are not all consistent, and I think while Striving for consistency is a legitimate perspective. It's unlikely, I think, given the fact that these are eight separate jurisdictions, each with governing bodies with the discretion to enact ordinances that they feel are most appropriate for their communities. It's unlikely that they'd ever be exactly consistent with one another. Relative to the fee amount, it's a fee, it's not a fine. It's based on, from my perspective, and I think in terms of what's authorized by the statute, it's based on our need to recover the costs associated with implementation of the program, which is about compliance and education and enforcement. A fine is typically established by some other basis intended to be a disincentive to some particular type of behavior. I don't know about the costs that were the basis for the fee amounts established by the three cities that have enacted ordinances, but from in terms of what we're recommending that your board enact in terms of this ordinance, the fee amount is set specifically to recover the cost of the program. Anything more would be charging a fee that exceeded the costs, which County Council would tell us we shouldn't do. Anything less would mean that we were establishing a discretionary program that essentially by design required some other means of financial support, general fund contribution, which I have a strong interest in trying to avoid, particularly when we have the authority in the statute to establish a fee amount that's sufficient to recover the full cost of the program, which is the basis for the fee that we're recommending in the ordinance. as to the question about why are bars included in the regulatory scheme in some jurisdictions and we excluded them, from my perspective, the principal objective of the ordinance was to give us additional enforcement authority to help reduce or eliminate sale to minors. You wouldn't expect minors to be in bars, and so it seemed like that was different than the rest of the business entities that we are recommending be included in this new program. Doesn't mean you can't do that or that you shouldn't do that. It just that was the basis of the rationale for excluding them in the ordinance that we proposed. That address all the issues?
Yeah, I believe so. Do my colleagues have any questions for Mr. Hammond? I will point out that what we're doing here is setting the hearing date. And we'll have the opportunity to further vet the details at that time. We're not actually acting on the ordinance. Of course, we do want to make it as complete as possible going into the hearing. So,
just a comment.
Supervisor Sajjan.
Mr. Hamm made a good sense of what he said. You go to a bar, you have to be 21. It's a legal product to sell. And we're getting into the phase of free enterprise. The bar doesn't sell, maybe next-door neighbor sells. You're taking away one item from a business person or a business location or an organization that's selling a legal product. It's your age that makes it illegal for you to purchase it. So having that in mind, I'm pretty much in agreement. And if we want to make it that everybody's on the same page, it's a difficult task because every city is different. We have two cities that don't have the very same thing. Which was last time when I commented, I want to see that we are at least what the cities are doing. But the more I think about it, that option that the county doesn't have, it's more a support of free enterprise, obviously. We want to help the community be educated in why they shouldn't smoke, but as long as the product is legal and the place is licensed to sell, then who are we to say you cannot sell? For what reasons? Do we have a reason?
I would submit, and I think the rationale in the city ordinances on including bars is that there is some, albeit a smaller chance, that minors could be exposed to the consumption of tobacco, and that was a way of making it similar to restaurants. That was a way of being stricter in terms of providing that wall between minors and. Getting tobacco in for their consumption. So, I do appreciate what you're saying, but again, I look at the cities extending that to bars, and my thinking is that some of these things seem cutting edge or a little bit aggressive at the point they go in. But in hindsight, I think we're doing the community a substantial favor by by trying to erect a high hurdle, especially against underage individuals getting their hands on tobacco.
The difference between a restaurant and a bar, a restaurant, a 10-year-old can go as long as he or she can afford buy a meal.
Right.
They can do so. But let's not disregard that the retailers are also members of our community as well.
And again,
the legality is the issue, and unless we have the facts, yes, I think the best, what we have done is the educational process through statewide, federal level, all the activities we have, less advertising, less encouragement, less incentives, and more places where you cannot smoke. I think that's the best tool we have.
Yeah. Well, your point's well taken, but I think that there's a variety of opinion on how aggressive we ought to be, and that just one caught my eye, and so I was floating that as a possibility among colleagues here.
Supervisor Robin.
Yeah, just wanted to state the few things I have with the ordinance, and those are other issues. But again, they're already licensing a business through the ATF. The issue that I have is we have two other sources of revenue that are specifically for tobacco cessation, and I think that the fee or the fine for this operation of this ordinance should come out of those funds instead of going out and retaxing the local operator. The words and stuff, how you do that's fine, but I think the revenue is the thing that bothers me the most, is that between the tobacco cessation thing, which was out of the tobacco settlement thing, and the other, I can't think of it right now off the top of my head, I think bring in more than adequate income over a large number of years, especially the tobacco settlement, which had a high proportion of it to be for cessation and education, which this ordinance does, and I just think it's unfair to go back out and put another tax on a retailer, and that's my objection.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Ovitz. Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you. One other quick comment, if I may, Mr. Chair. Convenience stores, where do they sell food? They also sell beer and wine.
Yeah, and it's licensed.
Yeah, is it alcohol, or is it just bar where you serve the drink? Is that the difference? Because we started a bar, then we're going to get to a convenience store because they now sell alcohol as well. I know San Luis, in the past, you couldn't own a gas station where you can sell alcohol. Then when Costco came in, I guess they got rid of that in order to make room for Costco. And I didn't think that was fair that they never considered small business person to be in the business world. And because of Costco now, the whole policy has changed. We either based on free enterprise or we're not.
The language that is included in the city ordinances that results in the inclusion of bars in the prohibition deals with on-sale licenses, so state licenses to facilities that are in the business of providing alcohol for sale and consumption on premises.
Yeah.
As opposed to off-sale, stores that sell alcohol.
My comment was, is this a leading a process that we'll start here, then we'll end there as well?
That's within your discretion.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's the pleasure of the board on this item? Again, today what we're doing is setting the hearing date.
Well, my thought would be to add language to extend it to on-sale on-sale establishments as part of the ordinance, on-sale alcoholic beverage licensed establishments as part of the ordinance going forward. We can either do that as consensus of the board if we have the votes to do that, or or we can introduce as is and go to the hearing, and I'm easy either way.
Okay, what's the pleasure of the board regarding Supervisor Gibson's comment, including language to make it consistent with the other cities and include bars? Or not?
This is in front of us going forward to a hearing, and let's, now that we had this discussion, we probably generated more input from the locals at the public hearing where a decision has to be made. Probably is the right place to continue this.
Okay.
Having that in mind, I'll move approval as it is in a consent agenda.
Okay. Second. Moved and seconded that we approve item A22. Do we need a roll call?
It's not approving it. It's introducing it, setting it for hearing.
Approving the process.
Here it's setting the hearing.
Right.
So this item we're setting the hearing.
Right.
So do we need a roll call on that?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
No.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. With that, we'll move on to the presentation calendar.
Move approval of presentation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the
that?
Presentation calendar.
Kacho, thank you.
Madam Clerk, roll call.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. And we do have a presentation this morning, and Supervisor Ovitt, you're going to make that presentation, so I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. At this point, it gives me a great privilege to invite forth a group of people who have taken the, I guess you want to call it, fortitude to reestablish the Paderewski Festival. And I'd like to call forward Steve Cassidy made it, and either Tim Fanning, Joe Armstrong, or Paulo Ferro, if you'll please come to the podium. There's three of the four I see here. And with that, I'd be glad to present the resolution, and then allow them some words to talk about the celebration. And as I said, this started actually back in 1990, I think it was 96, 93, I think it was. But anyway, and it took a short break, and I'm glad to see it coming back. The resolution recognizing the Paderewski Festival and Exchange Program for its contribution to arts and business in our community. Whereas Ignacio Juan, Jan, Paderewski, I get the short one I can't get right today, was a virtuoso piano composer, politician, humanitarian, orator, and a cherished figure in the 20th century. And whereas Paderewski purchased a farm 3,000 acres on the west side of Paso Robles, for those who have west side grapes, so we'll, and it was Zinfandel, the grape that was his choice. From 1914 to 1939, and one is the county's first commercial grape grower. And whereas Paderewski Festival of Paso Robles was relaunched in this year, 2006, in collaboration with the USC Polish Music Center to attract international pianists to our county. And whereas the Paderewski Festival seeks to mentor young men, young musicians through master classes, competition, scholarship, and performance opportunities. And whereas the Paderewski Festival is actively working to promote cultural exchange programs and sister city relationships with the counterpart organizations in Poland. And whereas the musical legacy of Paderewski continues to inspire generations of musicians around the world. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors, State of California, does hereby recognize the Paderewski Festival and Exchange Program for its contributions to the arts and businesses of our community, and thank the Board of Directors for their efforts in duly recognizing one of the county's most distinguished residents.
Well, good morning. I'm Paula O'Farrell. I'm representing the Board of Directors of the Paderewski Festival of Paso Robles. And thank you very much for honoring us today. That is very special, and we will cherish this. And I'm joined today by fellow board member Steve Cass and our event coordinator, Joe Armstrong. Just a little bit about Paderewski. He was an international music superstar, a world stage politician, and certainly a great humanitarian. He was Poland's first prime minister, a signer of the Versailles Treaty, and graced the cover of Time magazine twice. In fact, Time magazine called him the greatest pianist of his time and one of the three greatest that ever lived. When he died in 1941, President Roosevelt ordered Paderewski to be buried in Arlington Cemetery until Poland regained their independence. He could have lived anywhere in the world, and he chose Paso Robles, and he farmed, as Supervisor Ovitt said, farmed 3,000 acres for over 25 years. It's hard to imagine a more distinguished resident of our county. Our festival began in 1993, was suspended in 2003, and then resumed in 2006 with an impressive and very motivated board of directors. We are fortunate to have Marek Zabrowski, director of USC's Polish Music Center, as our music director to guide us in bringing renowned international musicians to our festivals. Our board members were recently invited by the Polish government to participate in the cultural exchange tour. We met with many individuals and agencies, including the First Lady of Poland, who are eager to help us build a world-class music event. We came home, we're excited about the tourism and business opportunities that these alliances might yield. This year's festival will be November 13th through the 16th. It will consist of 4 days of classical music celebration. We will again host a youth competition of piano students from across the county. Winners will receive cash prizes and an opportunity to perform at our festival. Ultimately, we hope to sponsor our winners to perform similar venues in Poland. We are especially pleased that delegates from Tarnów, Poland, where Paderewski owned a summer estate, will attend this year's festival. One of our key festival events will be the signing of a sister city understanding by elected officials of Tarnów and Paso Robles. And finally, our board seeks to educate our local students about Paderewski. We will be submitting an application for community project funding to develop a curriculum for third graders throughout the county as part of their study of local history. The curriculum will include detailed lesson plans and multimedia visual aids for teachers. We hope that each of you will see the value of this outreach program and improve funding for this. Thank you so very much.
I was going to say one other thing that you didn't bring up is
what the dates are.
History, or it has a rumor that Paderewski chose Paso Robles because of the healing qualities of the sulfur water, because he was having trouble with his arthritis or something along that line. And it was an interesting history if anybody gets a chance to look at it. And I forgot the name of the ranch. Ignacio?
San Ignacio.
San Ignacio, yeah. It's a ranch.
He's in San Francisco visiting with a friend, the King of
Hawaii.
Oh,
please speak to the mic and state your name, please.
I'm Steve Cass. I'm also on the board. A little bit more of that history. He was visiting San Francisco with his friend, who was the King of Hawaii at that time, before Hawaii was a state, complaining about his arthritis. And it was recommended by the king that he visit Paso Robles for the hot springs. He came down, ended up staying at the hot springs all the while he was here, and he was a property owner. He never built a house out of his property. He would play the piano and practice the piano with the doors overlooking the square every night that he was here. He invested heavily in Paso Robles and in Santa Maria, I should mention also. He had drilled for oil in Santa Maria while he was here.
And I was wondering what you could tell us the dates of the festival. Again, I didn't think I heard that.
Our gala event is Saturday, November 15th. There's going to be several auxiliary events in the week leading up to that. I think we have four music events altogether during that week.
Very good. Thank you both for coming. I do have a request to speak to this item. Mr. Eric Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and this is a fascinating history. He did indeed hop a train in San Francisco. He asked for a recommendation of a doctor. I think it may have been carpal tunnel syndrome, but whatever it was, he couldn't play the piano, and he was in the middle of a tour. And his friend said, "No doctor can help you like the healing waters of Paso Robles." And in his autobiography, he said that he was actually up to his neck in mud when a doctor who dabbled in real estate actually convinced him to buy the property. And he bought two ranches, actually, Rancho San Ignacio and Rancho Santa Helena, named for his dear wife. The kind of person he was is best illustrated by an anecdote where he was giving a performance and there was a six-year-old kid who was, you know, he played the piano at home, some little upright or something. It was his first chance to hear a great artist, his first chance to even see a great big grand piano on the stage. And as the audience was waiting for the artist to enter, the kid got out of his chair, clambered up onto the stage, and began playing Chopsticks in front of this whole audience that had paid to hear Paderewski. And, of course, his parents were thinking, is there a way that the floor can open up? What do we do now? And then Paderewski came on stage, and he took a seat beside the kid and started playing a bass part. And together, they got through Chopsticks And of course, the audience burst into applause. And he told the kid, never give up. Paderewski wanted his legacy to be a school where young people of limited means could pursue music and other arts, and he wanted it to be in Paso Robles. Global events pulled him away from this beautiful place, and obviously we know what happened around the late 1930s to his part of the world, and he was never able to realize that dream. But we should always remember that that was his dream and his commitment, and that to this day, any time we do anything to give access to youth to participate in and appreciate the arts, we are carrying on his legacy. And I would certainly like to thank the Paderewski Festival Committee for what they do to encourage our youth and to spread the message, the healing message, not only of the waters of Paso Robles, but of the arts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greeney, for that bit of history. Appreciate it. And again, thank you for being here this morning and introducing the county to the Paderewski Festival. Thank you both. With that, we'll move on to public comment. This is for items that are not on the agenda, and I do have some requests to speak on public comment. I'll begin with Hans Hansen, followed by Dr. Mary Fullwood.
Good morning. My name is Hans Hansen, and I am the president of Ride Nipomo. I have a couple of items to report here. The Woodlands project, which is 1,320 new homes, which have the traffic spilling out of three main arteries, Mesa, Camino Caballo, and eventually Eucalyptus, has produced a major concern to the community, the necessity for a safe trail along Camino Caballo from the Woodlands to the Nipomo Park is vital. It has already been several incidents where horses have thrown the rider, resulting in broken bones. Please take care of this before somebody gets killed. Parks and Public Works have been out looking at the situation, and all agree there are major safety problems now. And it will only get worse. There are about 8 properties that have encroached on the right of way. Jan DeLeo has met with several of the home of those owners and the representatives of Nipomo. Ride Nipomo have offered to help the homeowners to get the right of way up to compliance. We cleared a great deal of brush. We have sprayed chips over a large area, and we are plans to continue this assistance. The maintenance, which should be minimum, will be up to the house owner and the public works as an attached trail. The second item I wish to report is the continuing maintenance on Knollwood 1 and Calendar Grove trails. Ride Nipomo monitors and clears this on a weekly basis and plan to correct an erosion problem is now being worked on prior to our rainy season. We are happy to report that Ride Nipomo have done this with voluntary and no cost to the county. And I want to also thank you for listening to me on this. And I will stress the importance of the Camino Caballo trails before somebody really gets hurt. And if somebody gets hurt or even killed or something, you know, you will be probably in a lawsuit. So it's maybe something to do before something really bad happening on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Dr. Mary Fullwood, followed by Jesse Arnold.
My name is Dr. Mary Fullwood, the Los Osos representative for SLB Surfrider and the representative of the Sierra Club on the Marine Interest Group. The following was written yesterday and with the short notice received approval and support from both SLB Surfrider and the SL Sierra Club. Sustainable low-impact development principles are based upon balanced trimetrics of social, economic, and environmental concerns. Today I am focusing on two Los Osos wastewater project concerns, one that is economic and the other which is social. Economic. Last Tuesday during the LOWWP update, the STEP survey revealed that the town is philosophically 50-50 regarding STEP and conventional gravity technology. Until there are actual numbers from actual contract bidders on the project, you will not learn anything new about Los Osean thinking. Therefore, we recommend that you wait to do the community advisory survey until the RFP bids are in and the NWRI independent peer review is complete. Only then, with hard information on the economics and environmental and social impacts of the sewer, should you survey Los Osos on what is seen as the preferable project. Social. I was terribly disconcerted recently to learn from Fred Collins, the director of the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, the only state-recognized sovereign Chumash nation in SLO County, that no one, not Supervisor Gibson or anyone on the LOWWP project team, has engaged the Tribal Council in any meaningful way in over a year, not since the TAC Environmental Branch met with the environmental stakeholders at the NAP June 7, 2007. This must be rectified. Los Osos is the location of multiple village sites, one of the most sacred areas of all of San Luis Obispo County, and the goal is for the sites to remain undisturbed, and this is doable. It is not an unreasonable request. From the proposal to expand the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary down to the Central Coast, we have learned that over 60 new Chumash sites were located in Los Osos in 1990, and in Diablo Canyon, one site confirms continual occupancy for 9,500 years. Therefore, you must respectfully engage the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. Their requests must be adhered to within the complex solution for the town of Los Osos. The NCTC statement written for the LOWWP June 19, 2007, I am resubmitting to you today. It states, the NCTC is in strong support of getting the job done and doing it right. We want our sites avoided whenever possible and complete data recovery when we have to disturb or destroy a sacred site. Ancestral burials need to be avoided at all costs and a plan in place for unavoidable encounters. The statement has the support and approval of the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. Thank you for my statement today.
Thank you, Ms. Fullwood. Jesse Arnold, followed by Al Barrow.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I'm here to talk about genetically engineered food and the need for it to be labeled. I went to the farmer's market at San Luis Obispo last Thursday, and I talked to Robert Hayashi of the Hayashi & Sons firm, the vegetable growers in Arroyo Grande. And Mr. Hayashi told me that the corn they were selling is the genetically engineered BT corn. As I've told you before, that's the corn that has a toxin in it, and because of that, it's registered with the Environmental Protection Agency as a pesticide, but it's also approved for human consumption, and no labeling is required. But I did ask Mr. Hayashi if he did plan to label, and he said no. He said 90% of corn in the U.S. is genetically engineered. Well, I don't think that's true, but anyway, it reminds me of what your teenager tells you when you reprimand them for doing something that you think they shouldn't, and they say, oh, all the kids are doing it, so that makes it okay. But as far as I know, in this county, I've been surveying corn growers. I did it last year, and I'm doing it again this year. There's 10 or 12 that are not doing genetically engineered corn. There's Hayashi that's doing it and not labeling it. There's the Avila Valley Barn that's doing it, and they're labeling it, at least telling you that it is GE corn. So of the two we know of, one is labeling and one is not. Hayashi is clearly in a minority position in refusing to label. And it came up earlier about the smoking, that San Luis was the first place to ban smoking. Our county is already the first county where someone has voluntarily labeled, as Avila Valley Barn, voluntarily labeled genetically engineered food of any kind that so someone would know. So here we are. We're the leaders. I think your board needs to step up and ask growers and farmers markets to voluntarily label. I know you can't force them to because it's been preempted by the federal government, but you could ask them to voluntarily label, and you could lobby Congress to do the federal legislation to require labeling. Now, it took quite a bit of consumer pressure to get Avila Valley Barn to label, but eventually Hayashi's may also feel some consumer pressure and decide that they also will label. Anyway, growers in their neighborhood and you and whoever's listening to me is now notified what's going on there. I also want to reiterate that I told you last time my stock tip was sell your Monsanto stock. I have another confirmation why that would be a good idea. Monsanto has another branch of their business doing the bovine growth hormone that's injected into cattle to force them to produce more milk. Consumer pressure has made that go downhill. It's no longer working out, and Monsanto wants to sell that division of their business. So again, Monsanto, I think, is going to crash. I won't be surprised, but a lot of other people will. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Al Barrow, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I have three topics: affordability, environmental sustainable, and a conceivable technology regarding the Los Osos wastewater project. And I would start off by saying there's a great deal of competition today for affordable housing. Rental housing is under a great deal of pressure. I talked to my management company last week, and they said they have about 1% vacancy rate. That doesn't give the market, the rental market, any flexibility in terms of if you're looking for a certain type of housing, you got to take what you can get. If you have four kids and two people, you get a two-bedroom, that's what you take. You know, you take what you what's available when you need it. So there's a real problem in the county right now because people are paying higher percentages of their disposable income for their housing costs because of this pressure on the housing market. And part of that is due to the foreclosure market because people are no longer buying or in homes that they bought, but they're coming back into the rental market. So that exacerbates affordable housing. And those people that are low-income working people, I know the county employs a lot of people that get under $20 an hour, and I think you have to have an income of about $20 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment. So there's a lot of people who are in trouble. regarding the Los Osos sewer, I know we're a small percentage of the total population of the county, but we do need to have the most affordable project that we can achieve. And we also need one that's conceivable technology. I was disturbed to hear a story that the lead engineer for the project telling one of the persons on the TAC that there was a that the conventional gravity technology, which is Bell and Housing coupling, where you have a larger pipe with a smaller end pipe going into it, is old-fashioned, and that you won't be using that. But you haven't costed fused pipe. So the costs that you have now that were presented to you are not accurate, because that's a much more expensive way of installing gravity pipe, much more labor-intensive and so forth. So those things are giving a false picture, and I wanted to you to ask your staff to go over those numbers carefully and give us a more accurate reading on that. And that's what I mean by conceivable technology. Environmentally sustainable. When you talk about Chumash and the previous speaker had, I do support that, and the step collection is designed toward directional drilling. It can go around the burial sites, and because it's low pressure, it doesn't have to have that straight gravity feed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. As drought worries mount, so does the call to conserve. This board has a prime platform to announce to the community through this medium to conserve water. You also have a prime medium to tell those who are proposing development, such as golf courses, to delete that development. Swimming pools, hot tubs are also items that should be deleted from projects. Water usage is becoming a grave concern to everyone, not just to me. And this concern should be addressed throughout the county. Los Osos also needs this board to understand that when you do the sewer project and you direct your staff to do a good project that reclaims, that recharges our groundwater, that this is not only going to be a necessity, but it is also going to be a necessity as far as finances is concerned. We cannot, nor do we want to, afford imported water. And where will that imported water come from? Mother Nature is not providing that water. We can only build and use so many desalinization plants. They are tremendously expensive. The Los Osos community is a small community, and they are on a financial disaster road right now. Remember that. Please, we need to conserve water. You need to help us recharge our groundwater. And please don't say that the purveyors are the ones that are addressing this, because there is a lot of lack in that addressing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Lindy Owen, followed by Bob Rose.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I had one item I wanted to ask about before I start my regular comment. In Los Osos, we put real time on our video feed from AGP, which allows people who go back and look at a meeting to say, oh yeah, that was in the middle of the meeting. And it makes it so much easier if you know that the meeting started at 9 and at 11 your item came up. And I'm requesting, I've requested before to the clerk if we could have that looked at as a possibility. It's a very simple little item. It just gets added on. I think it would really help those of us that are AGP watchers have a good way to get to our items that we're trying to review. Okay, so what I wanted to talk about was I really feel that it's time that the TAC project be intervened by an outside review, because I think the process is totally failing to get us anywhere closer to a fair evaluation of projects. And I think it started off wrong by mixing components to begin with rather than giving us project by project. But some of the items I wanted to point out, Corolo Engineering, who is handling the oversight of the project, has a terrible record out at the Men's Colony. Their project, which is collection and disposal and treatment, is failing, and it's costing the county is paying, well, taxpayers are paying for the fines. So to have them designing our sewer and making decisions against STEP system is just downright a failure to actually get to a good project. The money that was spent on the flyers that were sent out by the TAC could have been spent on a very good meeting that could have presented the STEP collection, and it could have educated our community, and it could have compared STEP with the other collection system that is the one that just I don't think we could ever get to intelligently. But we didn't do that. TAC went ahead and sent out flyers that were negative about the STEP collection, and therefore did nothing to educate the community, but did create more of a political lean towards the conventional, which, and then why would we, my third question, which just really I think everybody on this board needs to think about it, the county designed and paid for a sewer project that went to the outside of town over by the junior high towards where we, you know, anticipate that the treatment plant and disposal area will be. And instead, this TAC is looking at the Montgomery-Watson plan, which brought all of the sewage into the middle of town. So my request is that you understand that why are they reviewing the Montgomery-Watson plan when they have a set of design plans that took it to the right direction outside of town? What they are reviewing, rather than review the intelligent set of plans that has been paid for by this county and by taxpayers, they're looking at the plans that take it into town, and then we'd have to pay to take it back out. So those are questions I ask for an oversight review soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Bob Rose, followed by Linda Seeley.
Good morning. I'm Bob Rose, a member of the Templeton Area Advisor Group Traffic Circulation Subcommittee, and my concern is the closure of Templeton Road. It has been closed since June the 1st. We assumed that this was going to be the Nacimiento project, and the first thing we knew, something was different. The road was being closed 24/7, unlike most of the other Nacimiento pipeline closures, were just closed during Monday through Friday work hours only. We find out that they were improving some vertical curves and horizontal curves on Templeton Road. And that's taking quite some time. We were told 4 weeks ago that they were running into some utility interference. Well, now that's going to take them 2 weeks. Now it's 4 weeks. It's understandable that there might be some utility interference because there's a 500 kV line goes underground at that point for a brief time. But why couldn't they have figured that out beforehand? To my knowledge, nobody wanted those curves fixed. We kind of liked our country road that had that little whoopee on. My grandchildren used to love it going over that little curve, and most people I've talked to like that. The Templeton Area Advisor Group was certainly not consulted whether this was a good use of taxpayer money or not. So, 2 points. One is, it's a waste of money. The second is, let's finish the project. Let's get it over with. There are businesses on that road, wineries, olive oil tasting sites. They say their business is down 40%. If you can't get it fixed right away, at least open it up during the weekends when you're not working on it. And I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Linda Seeley, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning. Supervisors, I'm here to speak as the president of the Terra Foundation. We are committed to a sustainable future for San Luis Obispo County, and the two things I want to mention are, number one, I didn't get a chance to read the paper this morning, but I saw an article that said something about an ordinance that will reduce light pollution. I didn't see if it was a county ordinance or a city ordinance?
City.
Oh, that's what I thought. So I would encourage you as a board to adopt a county ordinance to reduce light pollution. Our night skies are one of the reasons that people love to live here, because you can see the night sky. And the night sky provides for us humans a sense of wonder, and for animals it allows, and for plants it allows them to complete their reproductive cycles in a better way. And also humans need, as you know, we need darkness. The other thing is about the stores during the summertime. Countywide, all of these stores keep their doors open during the day and let all of their air conditioning out onto the sidewalks. And I've done sort of an independent request of stores around the county to ask them to please shut their doors. And they say they're not allowed to because they have orders from, if they're chain stores, from headquarters or from their management, not to shut their doors because it keeps customers out. So my thought was that perhaps the county could offer an incentive to business owners to keep their doors closed during the summer and the winter if they're using heat during the winter and if they're using cooling during the summer, by maybe having some kind of a green placard that they could put on their door saying, "We're saving energy, come on in, you know, it's cool or it's warm in here." And that could be kind of a badge of honor for the business, that they could say, "Yeah, we're helping green our county," because we have an opportunity to become, you know, San Luis Obispo County always prides itself on being a leader in California. And I think that we could lead California in this way, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seeley. And I know last year when this item on the businesses keeping their doors open during the hot summer days. There was a lot of attention brought to that, and I think it had a positive impact. I noticed businesses stopped doing it, basically, and you know that the board doesn't have jurisdiction over the incorporated cities, and we really can't direct them to do that, but I think just increasing public awareness and let the public communicate to the businesses that they would like that stopped. It was very effective last year, I know. So, thank you. Michael Wynn.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from Napomo. I want to speak to you briefly about the Oceano Dunes. As you've seen in this morning's Tribune, Perez Monreal, a 26-year-old man, was killed on the dunes Sunday night. Park people say there are about 300 accidents a year. There have been 18 people killed in the years 2000 to 2007. Mr. Monreal's death is the fourth this year, and we're only 8 months into the year. I bring this to you because I urge you to put a little more energy into the process of resolving this. On one side, we have people who simply say, shut everything down, stop letting people on there, forget about the businesses, let's just close the gates. I don't see how that can happen in a practical sense. On the other side, you have people who want to say, let's just keep on doing what we're doing, everything's fine, it's a good, clean family fun, people get killed, that happens, and no resolution there either. I would encourage you to take a middle road. I would encourage you to start a process by which we develop a five-year plan to make a transition from the kinds of businesses that are going on there now, which are dangerous to life and limb, and move them into things that are more environmentally responsible. I think it can be done with the cooperation of the Chambers of Commerce in Oceano and Grover Beach and Pismo. I think that it needs to be done, and should you decide not to go in that direction, then I would urge you to sell the land to the state, because the continued liability, which you share with them, which both has to do with matters of environmental liability and injury liability, is horrendous, and we're fortunate that we haven't had to deal with that yet. But we can't just simply sit there and let something continue without checking it. I think a sensible transition process could be done. I think businesses are currently profiting by that. The current business could make a transition in their own business if they knew what they needed to change to. And I think it could be done without a tremendous amount of upset. It won't be done without a certain amount of noise and fuss, but nonetheless, it could be done. I urge you to start on that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. I did receive another request to speak, and that would be David Nelson.
Good morning. My name is David Nelson. I live in Morro Bay, and I'm here to talk to you today about the Keop that they want to put over in Montana de Oro. Now, Mr. Ovitz is the last of the supervisors who set this up to happen, and I think that the county should pay the difference in fees to the state, because what's going on here is the golf course agreement with the county that I worked very hard on back 10 years ago to point out the problems with it. And this was one of the problems, is that we're giving the state the right to put up a kiosk over in Montana de Oro and charge all the county residents and everybody else to go in there. And it doesn't have to happen. You know, what happened in Morro Bay, just for a little quick refresher, is that the county built Dairy Creek. They got way in the hole on it. It's supposed to cost 4.8, cost 11 or 12. You guys know better than me. But in order to take the fees from Morro Bay and route them over to bail out the county on that, we signed this agreement with the county. And it wasn't a good agreement then, and I don't think the people are going to particularly care to have a kiosk set up over there. So I think that you should divert the county funds back from the golf course to pay them to keep the key off of there, so all county residents can use Montana de Oro the way I have for the last 30 years, is to drive in and enjoy it. It's a county road going through there. this was a bad deal, and if any of you want an update or review on it, I'd be glad to talk to you about it. I spent hundreds of hours on it talking to the supervisors and trying to convince them it wasn't a good thing to do. Green fees have gone up unbelievable at Morro Bay in the last 10 years since you signed this agreement. And the monies are being put to good use, I'm sure, but it's a state park in Morro Bay, and it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't. I said that 10 years ago, but this is the way that the bureaucracy works. We'll take care of one another, and to balance this, I don't think it's the right way to do it, to charge people to go into Montana de Oro. Like I say, thanks a lot, and I hope people remember that it did come from this body, that that kiosk is going to be available to the state. It was a bad deal. It's still a bad deal. We're paying way too much to play golf in a state park. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. That concludes my request to speak for members of the public on items not on the agenda. So I'll come back to the board, and Supervisor Sazian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, excuse me. Mr. Hanson brought up the point about the dangerous roads conditions. Camino Caballo, a while back, with the help of Wright Nipomo and Georgia Kenninger, we put a new ordinance in place, and that was supposed to be a three-step process. What I'm hearing, and as we heard, Public Works is ready to go to the second step, which is to send them the information that they need to be in compliance with getting their fences and landscaping out of the easement areas to make more access readily available for either equestrian trails or children walking to school or jogging or whatever it might be the case. I believe that the first step was for the community members to approach their own neighbors to say, you're encroaching and you need to clear a little bit more on a neighborly level with a little more maybe pleasant way of approaching. Second step was, if that did not take place, if the neighbor said, no, I'm there to stay, then our Public Works will look into it, and I believe they have looked into it and they have a letter in place to send to those neighbors to get rid of their fences and everything else. And if that hasn't worked, then the code enforcement's coming to the picture. But I will see where we are in the process and do a follow-up special on Camino Caballo. But the other thing, Mr. Chair, I want to bring to our attention, we have written letters to our state elected officials to help us with setting up speed limits. Areas where we have, such as Camino Caballo, where we have a mixed use of traffic, equestrian trails, kids on bicycles going to school, farm equipment, the mix of the uses should give us authority to deal with the speed limit rather than what it is in Title 19, which is 85% of speeders, and that becomes your speed limit. We have not received a response. So maybe it's time that we, through this board, write another letter as a reminder, as we did request, and we haven't received a response, and where is it in the process? If it is in the process, and at the same time, maybe ask our lobbyist as what are his efforts or where has that gone in. But what I'll do a follow-up with our Public Works, if maybe we're at the process where we code enforcement have to come into the picture and go to these areas. And Mr. Hanson, always being on the top of the issues, will be probably communicate with you as a representative of the equestrian folks, if I may put it that way, and see where it is in the process, and if we need to go with, I hate to use the term iron fist, and we have to do what we have to do to make it safer to all concerned. The other issue I want to talk about, Ms. Owens brought up something that I use within my business when I have my cameras, which we use it for security reasons. And it's always good to know if something was to happen place and we have to have an investigation take place, it's always good to know is what time did it occur, and have that timer kind of just get us to the what we want to see rather than watch a tape that's going on for 24 hours. So I thought with today's technology, it might be very minor and little expense. We can add that to what's available here and on the cameras, and not just for the sake of Los Osos, but for the sake of anything that anytime can happen, and we need to look into it and investigate it and make it happen. I think it's doable.
I actually talked, Lindy and I actually spoke to AGP at one point, and I thought they were taking the ball and running with it to make sure that occurred. I don't think it's anything that we can ask, we can make them do, but I understood that AGP was going to do that, and they do it for some other programming.
Okay.
So.
Very good. We can make that inquiry, though.
Sure
and,
can.
And see. All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen and lady. With that, we'll move on in the agenda to item C1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce item C1, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal of the South County Road Improvement Fee by Richard Sharp, 4th District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Mr. Marshall, you'll be making the staff presentation.
I will. Good morning, Chair Pete Patterson and supervisors. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. The project, the item ahead of you, in front of you this morning, is an appeal of a road fee, of South County road fee, associated with a building permit in the Nipomo area. The appellant is Mr. Richard Sharp, and the location of the project is 735 Whisper Lane, which is off Willow Road, about a third of a mile westerly of the intersection of Willow and Pomeroy. The project is a building permit number 2007-02554, and it's a conversion of a garage to a secondary dwelling. The South County road fees applicable to this building permit equate to about equate exactly to $10,337, and that is the point of the appeal by Mr. Sharp. Mr. Sharp provided a letter to your board dated June 11th, 2008, and in that letter he had 5 appeal points. I would be happy to go over each of the appeal points and address that as far as Public Works addressing each of the appeal points. But in general, staff did review each of those appeal points and found that none of them justified a waiver or a modification of the fee. So it's Public Works' recommendation that your board deny the appeal, and I am available for comments or to discuss each one of those appeal points if necessary.
Very good. Are there any questions of staff at this point? Okay. I see none currently, Mr. Marshall, so please stand by. Mr. Sharp, you are the appellant in this case, so you have an opportunity to state your case. So please proceed.
Okay, thank you. And although I know you, and although you've denied all the things item by item, I can't agree with all of what you have to say. I think you leave no room for any argument whatsoever.
Okay. Mr. Sharp, would you do 2 things for me, please? First, state your name for the record, and then also, if you could speak up just a little bit. That is a mic, and it should pick it up, but we need you to speak up just a little bit.
You got it.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Sharp. And what else do you want me to put into the record besides my name?
Yes, and then just speak up, please, so they can pick it up for the audio video.
Okay, I will talk a little louder then. How's that? Can you hear me now? The old saying, can you hear me now? Okay, I think Glenn has made valid points in why not tonight. I'd like you to consider one more item that was kind of overlooked, and that is that I'm converting a 3-car garage to a living residence. So we're going to cut down at least by 2/3 the amount of cars on the road. And in the ordinance, in your letter back to me, Glenn, you actually leave room for that kind of an adjustment to be made, where you state the ordinance itself and say it's based on the absence of use. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm cutting the use of the cars down by 2/3. So we'll have less traffic. And actually, you call it a road fee or a road impact fee. Is that what you call it? So actually, by reducing it by 2/3, I'd like you to consider that with the rest of what's on there. And I'm sorry I didn't read the ordinance close enough the first time to realize that that was the main emphasis of the ordinance. That's all I have. The rest is in the letter. Appreciate your consideration on it.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Are there any questions from members of the board for Mr. Sharp? I see none, so thank you. I'll open it to the public for public comment. If but I don't have any requests to speak on this item, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for action.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was last week that we also denied another request for a waiver, and we haven't accepted yet one. And the reasons are, Mr. Sharp, that you, even though you have a good argument that you're getting rid of a garage, that possibly will be getting rid of cars. But also when you take a garage and turn it into a residential, that also attracts more traffic because more people means more use of cars. Probably today under the same ownership, that formula might not apply. But as the future might cause that secondary dwelling be a rental within your right, or you might choose to sell and move to another location, even though there can be two owners for each piece of the secondary dwelling and the main one. But the whole idea is when you switch in a structure into livable structure, that will attract people to reside, and their means of transportation equates to cars, and that will put more cars on the roads. We can go back and forth, but we have never yet approved a waiver. And the whole idea of bringing those development fees in because of the lack of infrastructure that exists within a community, and hopefully it's taking a problem to solve a problem. We're looking at more structures in order to give us better structure, infrastructure. We can go back and forth, and our goal, and I respectfully listen to what you have said, as I've heard to the others, but I'm sorry that I'm going to deny to your appeal simply because the way we have done business on the basis of what the arguments are. And appreciate your taking time and bringing this to our attention. But on this one, I have to support the staff recommendation. And I don't do that I do that with some regrets, but that's the nature of the business we're in.
I understand that. Okay. The other thing that, and you said, you know, you restricted that to being family live-in only. I can't rent it.
I don't think that is the case. That's not the case, sir.
You've made me sign a statement that says I won't rent the property, that it will be a family member living in it.
I personally have never supported that simply because secondary dwellings can become a good affordable rentals and also maybe an income for the person who's maybe looking for another source of income.
But part of my package was to make me sign and be recorded that forever I can't rent it.
Let me hear it from the staff if that is the case, sir.
Mr. Chairman, John Hofshore, I'm supervising planner at the Permit Center. Yes, we do ask as part of the secondary dwelling unit process that they sign a statement that there will be an owner there. Now, it may not be him as the owner, but the future owners do have to reside on the property. We don't see that as having a direct relationship, however, to the discussion today. It's really the number of units versus how much traffic gets generated and so forth. But he is correct. We did get an owner's statement from him.
We have an ordinance that doesn't allow him to rent a place?
Yes, the secondary dwelling ordinance allows rental. However, you have to have an owner on premise in the other unit.
So he can rent a secondary dwelling as long as he's living in the main dwelling.
Right.
Okay. So are we clear, Mr. Sharp, on this one?
I'm clear, so I can only rent one or the other.
Right.
As long as you're on that property, you can rent one or the other. That is your choice, sir. And hopefully that will generate some income to make up for the development fees.
Learn something new.
Okay. With that, Mr. Chair, I move we approve the staff's recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve staff's recommendation. It requires only a voice vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And with that, we'll take a short break and reconvene at 10:05.
I was doing the professional, not hay stuff.
It works.
Okay, we need to start the green light. We're starting our meeting again. and we make sure our agenda is on item C2 now. And I'm going to hit record in a second.
If I could have your attention, please, we'll convene our meeting here with item C2, and Madam Clerk, if you would introduce that item, please.
This is a hearing to consider an ordinance amending County Code
Sorry. Go ahead and introduce it, and then we're going to rewind, because I...
you want to rewind first? Go ahead.
Yeah,
and rewind.
Let's rewind, and then you can introduce it later.
Okay.
Supervisor Lenthal, you would like to make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't get a chance to do that this morning, and a lot of times you'll watch the news and say what happened on this day so many years ago and everything else. One of the things that's a real privilege to announce is one of our volunteers, 88 years ago today, was born. That would be Mac. Mac, would you stand up here and come to the podium for a minute? It's Mac's birthday. Mac's proud to be 88 years of age. He's not bashful about it. I see him walking on Johnson Avenue on a regular basis. He's got about 15 years worth of service with the county. I first met him when he was over on the court side and in the courthouse, and he's been here almost the exclusive 3.5 years that we've been open. So, Mac, on behalf of at least the board here, I want to wish you a happy birthday, and can you say a couple words for it? What do you attribute your longevity to?
Thank you, Jerry. I have enjoyed my time spent working with all the Nash people from this building and from across the street in the courts. It's been a Nash experience for me. It's kept me out of trouble, except this morning I was... shaving, and I cut myself pretty bad right there shaving. You notice that I got a clean shave otherwise. So anyway, I've been expecting someone here, I don't know, the chairman or somebody else, to come forward one day and say, hey, you got a raise. How many years do you have to work here to get a raise? So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate it here. We're happy to do our part.
And we sure appreciate your service, and we'll double your salary today.
I'm sorry, Jerry, but that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mac, for your service.
Thank you, Mac. Thank you, Supervisor Lenthal, for bringing that to our attention. Now, Madam Clerk, we'll try again. Yeah, if you'll pick up mid-sentence, please.
8.12. Hearing to consider an ordinance amending County Code Chapter 8.12.735, Health and Sanitation, Solid Waste Services, increasing the maximum solid waste collection franchise period from 10 to 15 years. This item was introduced on August 5th, 2008. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. And to remind your board, this item was amended this morning to correct the first page of the ordinance, a clerical error.
Okay, thank you. And Ms. Whittlesey, you'll give the staff presentation on this item?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Mary Whittlesey from the Public Works Department, your solid waste coordinator. And we are here today to consider an amendment to the county code extending the franchise agreements from a current limitation of 10 years to a maximum of 15 years for solid waste collection franchise agreements. Historically, our code has allowed 5-year agreements as well, and in 1998 it was amended to allow 10-year agreements. And so our franchises over the years started out at 5 years and then became 7 plus 3-year agreements. And currently we've negotiated, most recently in our North County, 2 7-year contracts up in the, as I say, the North County. And now the Waste Connections Company, a large company, or a company that owns our largest landfill, the Cold Canyon Landfill, is requesting of its agencies that hold franchises to consider 15-year agreements. And that is because the Cold Canyon Landfill is undergoing an expansion and hoping to service us longer with its capabilities there. And that expansion is requiring $9 million worth of investment and the financing of that is requesting that the term of the affiliated companies be for the same period as the term of the loan for that expansion. So the three franchisees that are affected with us include the San Luis Garbage Company, the South County Sanitary Services Company, and Mission Country Disposal. And each of those three have requested, as I said, 15-year franchises from all of the agencies that they work with. And the South County Cities, in conjunction with the Integrated Waste Management Authority, has taken the lead already and approved 15-year franchises with the companies. There's two community services districts that are going to be considering that in the upcoming month, those same 15-year franchises. So adoption, making this change to our county code, will allow us to proceed with negotiating 15-year agreements with, the San Luis Garbage Company, the South County Sanitary Services Company, and Mission Country Disposal. It'll allow us to harmonize our county code with what the cities and the Integrated Waste Management Agency have done, and providing for efficient contract management by coordinating all of our efforts in this way. It'll also satisfy the lender requirements, and we expect, within the negotiations on those 15-year agreements, to improve our performance standards consistent with what the grand jury recommended in their latest report. So with that, I will take any of your questions, and I will point out that we do have members of the waste companies here. We have Tom Martin from Waste Connections is present in the audience, as well as George Kardashian from San Miguel Garbage.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for staff on this item at this point? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I don't have any requests to speak on this item. Would the applicants know they're not interested at this point? So with that, I'll return it to the board. I'll close public comment and return
second.
It to the board.
And waive reading.
As amended.
Second.
Okay.
I just want to make a comment.
Been moved and seconded that we approve staff's recommendation. Supervisor Asajian.
Very quickly, I'm glad to see this coming forward, because with the cost of doing business, the business that they're in, and the cost of investing money in their equipment, I think this is the least we can do is extend the leases as we move forward. Good job, and I appreciate the staff's looking into this favorably as well.
Very good. With that, we do require a roll call vote, so Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Motion carries. With that, we'll move to item C3, and Madam Clerk, if you would introduce that item, please.
Next item on your agenda is item C3. This is a hearing to consider amendments to Title 26 of the County Code Growth Management Ordinance regarding cleanup of outdated references and information, and to provide better understanding and efficiency. This affects all districts. The item was continued from May 13, 2008. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Ufrat, Ms. Manson, who will present this item?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Manson will summarize the department staff.
Very good. Thank you. Joe?
Okay, good morning. I was asking the clerk if she could put the screen up for me.
Is your mic on?
Yes, can hear me. I've got a soft voice. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Joe Manson, County Planning Information Services Group. Today, planning staff is providing your board with proposed amendments to Title 26 of the County Code, the Growth Management Ordinance. The proposed amendments accomplish two objectives: provide cleanup and housekeeping updates of outdated references and information, and secondly, simplification for better understanding and efficiency. On May 15th of 2007, your board held a public hearing regarding the annual review of the county growth rate and authorization of amendments to Title 26 Growth Management Ordinance, and I will now refer to that as GMO. At that meeting, your board authorized planning staff to develop future ordinance amendments related to the cleanup of outdated references and information and simplification. A public review draft dated March 3, 2008 was mailed to 19 interested persons, agencies, and community advisory groups, and that actually did go out on March 3rd. The draft was also posted on the Department of Planning and Building website. The public review draft included explanations of the proposed changes throughout the document in bold and italics after the proposed revisions within each section for clarification. The public review draft is provided in Attachment 1 in the report provided you today within the Planning Commission staff report, and that does start on page C3-12. On April 10th, the Planning Commission held a public hearing regarding these amendments. No public comments were received prior to the hearing. There were a few public comments provided during that hearing, and you can note those in Attachment 2 to the staff report, which are the draft Planning Commission minutes. However, they required no text changes. The Planning Commission did request one minor text change, as noted on page C3-60 on exemptions with the addition of item F, replacement dwellings. The proposed text changes refer to both countywide and the Napoma Mesa areas. It is staff's recommendation for approval of Growth Management Ordinance Amendment LRP 2007-00010 as shown in Attachment 3 in your staff report per Exhibit LRP 2007-00010A based on the recommended findings. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Manson. And I'll ask members of the board if they have any questions for staff at this juncture. Supervisor Ovitt.
Three questions. First one, if they remodel, is that the definition of remodel is vague, because the issue of remodel is if you're remodeling your house to put in a new kitchen or bathroom, it's not necessarily putting in new growth-inducing things. And it didn't define remodel as adding on new bedrooms or adding on another addition. And I just want to know if what is this definition of remodel that's going to be used?
Okay. Is there
It started on C318. That's the easiest place I can find it right now. Because the word remodel is added. It's not been in there before. And you talk about new construction or remodel, and it's dealing with growth management. And the issue is I can go in and remodel my house but not add a new bedroom or not add anything to density or growth, or I can go in and get another permit that adds a new bedroom or, you know, does something like that, which would then count. So what definition are we going to use?
Okay, I think one thing that we were aiming at, and just for reference, it's on page C3-18, at the top of the page, item A, entitled Proposed Dwelling Units. The provisions of the title apply to all dwelling units proposed to be constructed, whether by new construction or remodel. I know one thing that has come in at our front counter before with a quote-unquote remodel is where they are potentially doing a secondary dwelling but attached to the primary dwelling. So we wanted to make sure that we do catch those instances where we do have technically, like in the ag.
I don't have an argument, but when you have a dwelling unit, you can also remodel it and not add on what would be a growth situation. And I think it just needs to be clarified, because it can have a definition or an interpretation at the front counter.
Mr. Ovid, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I would direct your attention to page C-362.
Okay. Now we've got back to the back pages.
And the one I'm looking at is Attachment 3, which is what the staff recommendation is that you actually adopt. And on that page, in paragraph 4, within parens, there's a description of what a new dwelling unit is. And at the bottom there's a paragraph that says, for the purposes of this ordinance, new dwelling unit does not include replacement of an existing lawfully established dwelling unit with another unit on the same site, or the remodeling or enlargement of an existing unit. So I think the definition of remodel is...
if that's what the one is recommended, because...
It's meant to exclude the remodeling of an existing unit.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
But in the example that Ms. Manson used, where a garage perhaps is being converted to something that is a dwelling unit, then we would intend to pick that up.
Okay. If anybody else has another question, I want to check, because the next question came up and was the issue of the mobile home. If it's a replacement in a mobile home park that had an existing unit, it should be exempt from this. And that would, that one was,
It does, if you look at the same paragraph Mr. McNulty just referenced, it also says...
yeah, replacement. See, that was not in the other section.
Okay.
And then the only last one I have is the term allocation. I just want to make sure we're not going to go back to the same old system that we had before, where all we did was count allocations and everybody came in line and got an allocation, but nobody was building. That when we're talking growth management, we're not talking an allocation. We're talking building permits and those that are issued and those that are completed. And that's just a fear I have, that once you go back to the word allocation, and I know we had the problem with what word to use correctly when we changed it a couple of 3 years ago.
Yes, Mr. Evett, you are correct. We are not going back to that old system. Sometimes it just is confusing to our customers using two different terms. So, no, we are not going back to that old system. The existing system will remain just with a definition simplified in one term.
Thank you.
And Supervisor Gibson.
Yeah, a quick question. I'm looking at C-372, and it's the issue of communities with waiting lists down in subsection, it would be J-1-A-3, which points you to the next to last paragraph on the page, which might have been simpler. Transfer of allocations in Cambria. I just want to make sure I understand the language. It says residential allocations may be transferred within the CCSD, Cambria Community Services District, as long as such transfer conforms to the district ordinance, such and such. I assume what that means is that if someone has filed for an allocation and is on the waiting list in the CSD, that a new owner picks up that parcel, that is a transfer within the CCSD?
Right. It stays with the ownership of the parcel.
Okay.
So it would transfer to a new owner.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure that was the intent of that of that language.
Right. And just for clarification also, the wording in item III has not been changed from what is currently in there. It's just that whole section was moved to a different portion of the ordinance.
Okay. Any other questions from my colleagues? Seeing none, I'll open it to public comment. And I do have one request to speak, Jerry Bunin.
I will be very brief. Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. We read this when I went to the Planning Commission. We read it here. We have no problems with it. And I wanted to publicly thank the planning staff for having four different people tell me this was on the agenda and send me an email about it. And D1, too. Thank you.
Okay. That's efficiency for you.
That's effective.
All right. That was my only request to speak, so I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Staff's recommendation on this item, and that does require a roll call, so Madam Clerk.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
And did we waive the reading?
Yes, we did.
Motion carries. Item C4.
I didn't hear anybody say
it. Yes, we did. I did.
Waiting for administrative officer to arrive. Would you like to introduce it?
Check me to read slow.
Madam Clerk, yeah.
Next item on your agenda is item C4. This is a hearing to consider an ordinance amending section 2.56.040 of the county code to clarify that county officers are eligible for appointment to the Pension Trust Board of Trustees. This item was introduced on August 5th, 2008. Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, we don't have a staff member present to address this, so we'll take a oh, there he comes. All right.
That's not Gail Wilcox.
What's happened to her?
Yeah, what have you been over?
Oh, Harry.
Timing was a little off, Mr. Chairman. Sorry about that.
We'll remember that in the next year. Performance review. Yeah.
The timing was a little off.
Just in time.
Middle of another meeting, my apologies. This one's a quick one, I hope. I think you'll...
I'm just going to make a motion.
Yeah, let me... You can... you've seen the details, and let me get to the appropriate page so we can take care of it. C4, there we are. Thank you, I got it. And basically, this is related to the plan that you had already outlined to appoint the auditor controller to the pension trust board for one of the vacant seats that the board makes appointments for. There was a concern that certain language in government code could have the practical effect if Mr. Seaback took this seat of declaring that by doing so he'd immediately vacated his position as auditor controller, and that the way it works is that the most recent office to which that person ascends is regarded as the superior office. And needless to say, his pay in his current position is significantly better than the pay he would receive as a member of the pension trust board.
But the prestige, maybe.
The prestige is probably about to wash, but the paying the daily bills was a concern. So this language would clarify that that isn't the situation here, and would make that an appointment that could be made without the concern that the individual elected official would somehow lose their elected position by taking on this responsibility from the Board of Supervisors. And that's about the sum total of what this particular ordinance will do for us. It would also apply, of course, by implication, should you choose, or future board choose, to appoint a different elected official to the position. Sheriffs, treasurer, tax collectors, clerk recorders, each one of them could take that office without this concern.
And that's it. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Edge. Questions for Mr. Edge from my colleagues? I see none. I'll open it to public comment, though I have no request to speak on this item. So I'll close it to public comment and bring it back to the board for action.
Staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt staff's recommendation. Roll call, madam.
And waive reading.
And waive the reading. Yes. And so, Madam Clerk, if you would call the roll, please.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Motion carries. So we'll move along to item D1. And if I could have the clerk introduce that item, please.
Next item on your agenda is item D1. This is a request to authorize the processing of amendments to the Land Use Ordinance Title 22, Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance Title 23, and Rural Property Division Ordinance Title 21 to shift some land use permit and land division hearing workload from the Planning Commission to either the Administrative Hearing Office, or I'm sure they're supposed to be, Officer, or the Subdivision Review Board.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Alanda, will you be speaking to this item on behalf of staff?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, good morning. I am Vic Alanda, the Director of Planning and Building, and I'm going to make some introductory remarks and turn over the rest of the staff report and briefing to Warren Hogue. I just wanted to point out for the record this morning that this board is not approving any ordinance amendment or shortcut process on issuing any kind of permit. This is just an open discussion in response to a directive, an informal directive you gave me on May 13th, in essence to juggle the budget to see what we could do to expedite the permit processing. And let me clarify the permit processing. We're not talking this morning about actually building permits for single-family dwellings, commercial, et cetera. I think we have most of that under control. We're talking about the land use entitlement process. Later on, when Mr. Hogue talks to you and briefs you on this matter, he's going to be bringing to your attention three specific recommendations. Again, let me underscore that word. These are just recommendations. We're not suggesting that what we're going to brief you on this morning is to, as the paper pointed out, to strip the Planning Commission of their decision-making ability. They're a quasi-judicial body appointed by you, and what you do as far as your relationship with the Commission is obviously your prerogative. I wanted to point out again that the suggestions that relative to permit streamlining, we have been working on other aspects of permit streamlining and handling hearing items. For instance, and you'll probably hear from Mr. Hogue this morning, that we've added additional Planning Commission hearing dates. Now, having said that, you know, will that help process applications faster? And the answer is yes, and it's also no, because of the length of the calendar on any given agenda. You know that, and I know that. You've seen numerous items in front of you, and sometimes you think we're going to get out of here by noon, and you hear the motion move to continue after 5 o'clock. That happens also at the Planning Commission.
That could happen today, looking at the number of requests to speak.
Again, we're recommending that you consider looking at a possible ordinance amendment to streamline the process. Now, I need to underscore something else, that the earliest date, based on the calendar in front of the staff, the earliest date that the Planning Commission can even look at and consider this item is December 11th, because the calendar is impacted. So this notion that staff and others are trying to do an end run around this board to get these amendments through before January, it just cannot be accomplished, even if that was our motto, and it isn't. The other issue that I wanted to point out is that the authorization process, and this is all it is today, doesn't have to happen today. If you choose to deliberate more, maybe off calendar or with a subcommittee, possibly two board members, two commissioners, somebody from the public, to meet with staff between now and the 11th or even sometime next year, again, that's your prerogative. If you really want to delve into every aspect of what you're going to hear from Mr. Hogue this morning, that's a consideration that I think you ought to take into consideration prior to even giving us directive this morning to go ahead and authorize amendments, if, again, that's your prerogative. I think three key things have to be done before you actually execute that directive to us in authorizing. One is clearly define what the problem is. Two, define what your expectations are of the staff, Planning Commission, or even applicants. And three, do we have the resources to address, you know, meeting those expectations? With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to close here and turn it over to Mr. Hogue so he can move on with the briefing, and then we'll be available to answer any questions. But obviously, I think you have a question.
Well, yes, I would like you to expand, Mr. Orlando, if you would, on your comment regarding the authorization today versus not authorizing it today. If we were to authorize staff to begin the process today, would any issues not be considered? I mean, is there, I think short of actually defining the problem and defining potential solutions, I don't know that there is a disadvantage in not recommending, that there's a disadvantage in recommending staff to go ahead and proceed. I can't envision the difference, really.
I think that if you all agree, if the consensus is there's a time is of the essence, and you do want to address the issue of expediting land use permits, or moving through the process faster, then yes, authorize staff, but then we're still going to have study sessions and we're going to vet this with the advisory councils, we're going to vet this with the public, we're going to vet this with interested parties, stakeholders, et cetera, because you're going to be asking those same questions. Did you vet this with XYZ? And the answer is going to have to be yes. So that's going to be very time consuming. So on one hand, to get the process moving, from my perspective, I think it would be advantageous to move the agenda and start the process.
Okay. Good. Supervisor Songhan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Holland, yesterday I had a message from Mr. Douglas, which then I shared it with Ms. Griffin. Whatever we choose to do here with this, what's in front of us, it raises a red flag for the coastal areas, because the LCPs for coastal areas, when you introduce an amendment, that amendment should also go through the LCP amendment. And as we all know, what it has taken to have a couple of LCPs approved, that taken us more than a decade to even get on the agenda. I don't know if I personally want to go there, to be honest. And what is the thinking as how would this apply to the coastal areas? Is this something to apply if the board chooses to go that route on the inland land use?
I suspect that we would bifurcate the process and strictly address the inland areas. Again, that would be open for discussion among the board and others.
Supervisor Asajian raises a good point there. Would they be processed separately, or we would just exclude the coastal areas altogether? How does staff anticipate dealing with that issue?
Well, I think if we're going to deal with it, I think the decision has to be made, directive given to staff, because of, as Supervisor Sargent pointed out, the potential length of delays by going to the Coastal Commission with LCP amendments, that would be an extensive delay. So having said that, if the board directed staff and council concurs, we would bifurcate it and handle it as a separate matter with inland regulations.
Thank you. I see no more questions, Mr. Orlando. Thank you. Mr. Hogue.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building.
Microphone. Okay, am I on now?
You're on.
Okay, thank you. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. So, sorry for the false start. This is, what I'm going to talk about specifically is the part of the puzzle, and it's only one part, of how can we be more efficient in handling the workload. And what we've brought to your board today are some suggestions for streamlining the hearing workload. And this is only the very beginning of the process, as Mr. Hollanda pointed out. This is a request to authorize processing. And the questions have been asked that, well, have you discussed this thoroughly with the public or the Planning Commission? As Mr. Hollanda pointed out, we're reacting to suggestions that your board made in May, and we have developed these ideas, and that's what they are right now, is ideas. They're not formal proposals. And we felt we should bring them to your board for a first look, and actually our process requires that. To amend the ordinance, we have to come to your board and request that you authorize processing before we expend more staff time and money and take up time on Planning Commission agendas and other processes and invest that much into it. So this is the first look, and we fully expect that there will be a thorough review before this ever gets to hearing, if you do authorize it for processing. So I just wanted to say that to begin with, because I think there was some concern about that. What is the proposal? The proposal is to process ordinance amendments to streamline the hearing process. And the question was asked, well, will this apply to the coastal zone too? And what happens with the time delay? Well, what we've done in the past with these proposals is we've process them for both the inland area and the coastal zone at the same time through the county process. The inland amendments take effect 30 days after your board acts on them. The coastal zone amendments go on to the Coastal Commission and don't become effective until the Coastal Commission completes their review, they submit their action to your board, and your board accepts it. So yes, there is a time delay, which can be substantial, as Supervisor Asajian pointed out. What we're suggesting is to reassign some decision-making for specific land use permits and subdivisions. That would shift approval of primarily time extensions, conformity reports on road abandonments, and most tract maps. But that last part, that's probably the most significant part of this process, and that could definitely stand to have more refinement to it and more discussion. And the proposal would be to move from the Planning Commission those decisions to the Subdivision Review Board and the Hearing Officer. What are the purposes of doing this? Spread the hearing workload more evenly among those bodies, provide more time on the Commission agendas for review of legislative matters like general plan and ordinance amendments and major projects, and to allow timely scheduling of hearings. By way of background, I'm sorry, I went a little too far, and let me see if... By way of background, in 1992, we went through a similar process with your board. Prior to 1992, all land divisions were reviewed and approved by your board of supervisors, and at that time, it was felt that workload wasn't allowing your board enough time to focus on legislative matters, budget matters, and other major policy issues. So that authority was transferred to the Planning Commission for tract maps, and that means five lots or more under state law, and for parcel maps and lot line adjustments and certificates of compliance, that was assigned to the Subdivision Review Board. Parcel maps are four or fewer lots. And this did allow the board more time to focus on those matters. What are the issues here? Well, the complexity of the Planning Commission workload has increased. We've had some very important, complicated issues come forward, and quite frankly, we see those continuing. Recent examples include amendments to the ordinance for mobile home park conversions, for condo conversions, for affordable housing, inclusionary housing, smart growth initiative. We've had major projects. Santa Margarita Ranch is an current example of one. And what has that meant? Well, unfortunately, it's meant that there are fewer items heard per meeting and that more items are continued to later meetings. Is that a bad thing? No, not necessarily, but it means that is the consequence of having to give a thorough review to these very important items. I would mention that Planning Commission in the first half of this year had handled 48 items in 12 meetings, and about a third of those were continued. The SRB handled 26 items in six meetings, and about 11% of those were continued, and then the Administrative Hearing Officer handled 76 items in 11 meetings, with about 1% of those being continued. So talking about consequences, there's less time for review of legislative matters like amendments, complex policy issues, and the major projects that I identified. That also means lengthy waits for items, projects to get to public hearings. And as Mr. Hollanda previously mentioned, if we had a project ready to go right now today, the soonest I could get it on an open hearing date would be December 11th. And that is about a 9-week delay from what our normal process would be. We have a normal 7 to 8 week lead time. And I would mention at this point that we have already added two meetings to this year's calendar to try and address this. We typically only have two meetings at the end of the year because of holidays, and we've looked for special meeting dates to restore that, and we'll continue to look for opportunities for additional meetings next year. So that is part of the strategy that we're looking at anyway, independent of what your board chooses to do on these suggestions today. So what are the proposed changes? What specifically are we talking about? Because I think there's been some confusion and concern. What the Planning Commission does today that would go someplace else are tract maps and any concurrent land use permits that go with that tract maps, but not for agricultural cluster subdivisions or condominium conversions. time extensions for most tract maps, the ones not related to ag clusters or condo conversions, and their concurrent land use permits would go away from the commission. Third and final time extensions for all land use permits would also be transferred. And then general plan conformity reports, which are consent items to begin with, would be transferred, but only for road abandonments. There would be others that would be kept, and I'll mention that in a second. Now, what would go to the subdivision review board are the tract map and concurrent land use permits that aren't for ag clusters or condominium conversions, time extensions for those tract maps and their land use permits that don't deal with ag clusters or condo conversions, and third and final time extensions for conditional use permits, development plans, and variances. Also, they would consider conformity reports for road abandonments, and one of the reasons for doing that is that there's kind of an economy of scale in the sense that often road abandonments are handled through notations on proposed subdivision maps, and then this would put it all in the same shop. I might mention that the subdivision review boards now occur once a month and typically don't go past noon, so moving these items to the SRB mean that they will get heard sooner, and it's possible that the workload could be handled in a single day, although we could look at adding a second meeting. I might also mention, for those that aren't that familiar with the process, who is on the subdivision review board. There's five members of the subdivision review board. One is from the County Public Works Department, one is from the County Environmental Health Department, one is from the Air Pollution Control District, two are from the Planning and Building Department. Of those two, one is from the Planning Division and acts as chair, and the other is from the Environmental Division. So that's the representation on the subdivision review board. Now, what would go to the administrative hearing officer? The only thing that's going to go to the administrative hearing officer are third and final time extensions for minor use permits. And one of the reasons for us suggesting that is it's the administrative hearing officer that approves the minor use permits in the first place. So it just made sense to us that if we're looking for ways to easily reduce some of the commission workload, that giving this function to the hearing officer was a logical thing to do. There's been a lot of comments I've heard about delegating things directly to individual staff members. It is true that these hearing officers are four people in the planning department. I happen to be one of them. And we already do certain things, which I'm going to show you in a second. But the only thing new that we'd do would be these third time extensions. There wouldn't be any other decision-making authority delegated to that individual hearing officer. Okay, what stays the same? The Planning Commission will keep, as you can see on the screen, conditional use permits, the development plans, variances, tract map and land use permits for, again, ag clusters and condos, conversions. Minor use permits that are referred by the hearing officer. Our ordinance allows the hearing officer to decide in certain situations to send a minor use permit directly to the Planning Commission. And, of course, the very critical role of making recommendations on legislative acts like general plan and ordinance amendments that I know that your board relies heavily upon. These are the most complex matters. These four things are the most complex matters that seem to be of the greatest public interest. The commission would also keep appeals of site plans and appeals of staff interpretations. They would also continue to have on their consent agenda conformity reports on public acquisitions of property or sales. And with these shifts, if we're looking at the first half of this year, 54 of the 76 total action items that were heard would have stayed with the Planning Commission if this proposal was implemented. That's about 71%. 22 would have been shifted to the Subdivision Review Board or the hearing officer.
Could I jump in just briefly, Mr. Hogue? Do you have a sense of how much time those 22 items, did you make any measure of the you know, how much time did 54 of those items take versus how much time did the 22 take?
We actually haven't tabulated it in detail, and we would do that if this is authorized for processing. I would say that those 22 items probably proportionately, even though they represent 29% of the total number, are probably more like about 10% of the total time that the commission would spend. I'm looking in the audience, and I'm getting some head nods.
Most of them are consent calendar items.
Many of them are, not all of them are. Okay, so what stays the same for the subdivision review board? They keep most lot line adjustments. Certain lot line adjustments go to the hearing officer now. These are ones that are categorically exempt from the Environmental Quality Act and are not in the coastal zone. Conditional certificates of compliance would stay with the SRB. So would parcel maps, concurrent land use permits, and time extensions for parcel maps and lot line adjustments. The administrative hearing officer keeps minor use permits, some lot line adjustments, the ones I just mentioned, road names, and administrative fine appeals. Okay, what also stays the same about the process, and there's been concern expressed about this, for all the items that currently require public notice and public hearing now, they will still have public notice and public hearings. Any decisions on these actions that are transferred must be made publicly. These decisions can be appealed to the board as they are now, as they can be now, and electronic access to meetings in progress, agendas, staff reports, and minutes will continue. What will be different is that at this point, because of budgetary considerations, the SRB or hearing officer meetings will not be broadcast on cable TV, but they will be available through video streaming online through our Granica system. So there's options for your board to consider. In addition to the issue of looking at track maps and whether they should leave the commission in toto or only partly and go to the SRB, one thing that's occurred to staff since the staff report was adopted was that track maps for projects with EIRs and planning unit development projects that involve track maps should stay with the Planning Commission, and that's something we'll discuss with the commission if this is authorized and we have the study session. Another idea is there could be a threshold established based on the number of lots created for maps to stay with the Planning Commission. If it's over a certain number, it stays with the commission. If it's under, it goes to the SRB. As mentioned previously, we can look at increasing the SRB meetings based on workload from once to twice a month. And then, of course, your board does have the option to not authorize these amendments for processing either at this time or permanently. So I would conclude by making the staff recommendation to direct us to process these amendments to Titles 21, 22, and 23. So that's the Real Property Division Ordinance, the Inland Land Use Ordinance, and the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance to move specific decisions from the Planning Commission to the Subdivision Review Board or the Hearing Officer, and at the same time direct staff, and this is something we're asking you to direct us to do, is to hold a study session very early in the process with the Planning Commission and also refer the amendments to the Community Advisory Council, something we would do anyway as part of our process. And then also direct us to evaluate the options for the review of track maps, you know, the ideas I just shared with you or any other ideas you may have, and also to evaluate whether to hold the two SRB meetings a month. So I think I've gotten to the end of what I wanted to make sure the public and the board understood about what our suggestion was. I want to reemphasize this only begins the process. Further review and formal hearings will follow, and we'll also develop more detailed expected results. So with that concludes my presentation, unless you have any questions.
Okay, I do, Mr. Hogue, one quick question. I just want to make sure that we're clear. You've expanded the recommendation here to include some other items, which I appreciate, but we are not in any way limited to other options that may come up during the process of public participation and Planning Commission review.
Not at all.
Just because we don't see it in front of us today does not mean that they won't be considered. So I just want to make that clear, because there have been other suggestions that may address this issue as well.
And staff would welcome those
suggestions. Good. Okay, very good. Supervisor Ovid.
Yesterday when I met with the staff, we had another one I didn't see here. Maybe it's not defined correctly, but you used the term concurrent planning. And there is issues where you have two or three different separate permits that are required for a plan that have to run on separate tracks. And as part of this investigation, I think it would probably be looking at it, putting those all together at the same time, so that if, you know, it actually... in processing time, it probably saves a couple of 3 months, and it saves staff time. So I think when you get into concurrent planning, it would be to look at all of those that have multiple permits and how you can streamline that process. It doesn't mean that, you know, that I think here one goes to planning, one goes to subdivision, or you may even have the hearing officer involved. Did they either all go to one agency for final approval?
Actually, our system allows for that now, but we'll look at trying to make sure that it happens even more.
There are some that don't, yeah. But we can refer them to you.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I pick up on the general idea that Supervisor Ovitt started here. You know, I think when we mentioned back in May the idea that we'd like to see some ideas for streamlining the permit process, I thought that was a rather general, a very broad direction that we had given to staff. And Supervisor Ovitt points out that there are many other ideas that are potential winners here that I think need to be addressed. I am very interested in hearing public comment on this, but I'd like to just float the idea, and I'll bring it back after public comment. The staff report had a fairly specific recommendation of authorizing, the way I read it, fairly specific amendments, or quite specific amendments, to Titles 21, 2, and 3. I'd like just to put out there that where I'd like to go is, rather than an authorization to amend, direction to staff and to pursue some further study of specifics. And we can talk about those specifics maybe after we've heard public comment.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. I have no more requests to ask staff questions at this point in time, and I do have a very significant number of requests to speak on public comment. So I'm going to open it to public comment and ask you to please keep in mind what others have said before you, what planning staff has clarified this morning on the actual action taken today, and limit your comments to germane issues. I was asked to go in order of people wanting to speak 1, 2, or 3 minutes, but I think that what I'd like to do is just ask all of you to be mindful of the time and your comments, and we'll just quickly go through these as expeditiously as we can. So I'll open it to public comment, beginning with Richard Hawley, followed by L.J. Hansen, and the third person up would be Eric Greening. So, Mr. Hawley.
Good morning. My name is Richard Hawley, and I'm the Executive Director of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. I've got just a few general comments on this, and while I'm always supportive of streamlining this particular process, I do have some serious questions that I'd like to pose and some statements here. Chairman Patterson, Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust, asks you and your board to deny the staff request to proceed with amendment of the general plan for elimination of the public decision-making process as it currently exists with full Planning Commission decision-making authority. And that would apply to the Subdivision Review Board, too. Elected officials and their appointees on the Planning Commission should hold the final power to direct land use in the county of San Luis Obispo. The proposal will mean that fewer land use decisions are made by elected and appointed officials, and more final decisions about the future of this county will be made by staff who are not accountable to constituents, like each of you are and your appointed planning staff members or your planning commission members. The proposed amendment is arbitrary and seems to be a designer amendment meant to accommodate favored types of development. No real data has been submitted to show that there is a problem with the current authority of the Planning Commission, so that the proposal is really unsupported by any facts that I have seen, and I didn't read those in the report either. Green Space to Cambria Land Trust believes that if any change is made, it should be to provide more public review of the decisions of elected and appointed officials, not less. And, you know, there seems to be a lot of discrepancies with the local coastal plan and some of these suggestions, and that would again mean that part of the county has more protection than others, than other part of the county. And that's always been a problem with me, seeing that the coastal area has more environmental protection than the rest of the county, and the rest of the county should be conform with the coastal area, because the county in general has some very wonderful environmental aspects, and they're not being protected properly. If you want to spend staff time doing things, boy, there's sure a lot of other things that might be more advantageous for staff to do in the time of these budget issues that we have. And one of them might be looking at the Waste Management Authority and how the $3 a ton is being spent or not being spent, things like that, where the money can be directed to help with hazardous waste materials, like we don't have any in the North County at all, and we're supposed to have. Same with green waste. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Hawley. L.J. Hansen, followed by Eric Greeney.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is L.J. Hansen. I live in rural Arroyo Grande. I am very perplexed with this idea behind D1. As it stands now, the Subdivision Review Board is made up of only their own peers in the Planning Department. Naturally, if something controversial comes up, it is only common sense to know they will side with their fellow workers. Each district has only one planning commissioner to look after the community, and if the workload is too much, perhaps they should have an assistant. It could be a volunteer from their area. Another idea, the local advisory group, which are elected by the community, could look at the documents and review and highlight them just to expedite the understanding of them. The public needs more say in matters, not less. For example, Calendar Garrett, on page 7-58 of the South County Planning Standard, states, new parcel sizes cannot be smaller than 2.5 acres. Yet the Hernandez project is up for approval to become a cluster. The developer asked for the 2.5 acres, which was acceptable to the South County Advisory Council, but planning advised he should go for the cluster. Please do not grant this change in authority requested in D1. Rather, select responsible members of the community to be part of the Subdivision Review Board, and do not change what goes to the Planning Commission. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Eric Greening, followed by Istar Holliday.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and as Mr. Hawley reminded you, we are in an economic hard time. We have been warned that next year could be worse budget-wise than this year, and this year a lot of needs are being sacrificed. Under financial considerations in this staff report, it basically says the time involved with the considerable work that staff would have to do in preparing this item will be absorbed. I would like to know how much time that is that they are not doing other work. But beyond that, in addition to the tremendous amount of staff time taken up with getting these amendments through the process, if the amendments actually are implemented, what would be the financial concerns of that? Do you realize what an incredible bargain your planning commission is? They only get a per diem. They get no county benefits, no salary, no civil service protection. They are actually the lowest paid people of anyone who gets county paychecks. And in preparing for an all-day meeting for which they get the per diem, they also do a considerable amount of staff report review, site visits on their own dime. All of this happens, it probably adds up to well under minimum wage per commissioner. To the extent that you shift workload from these folks to people who get generous salaries and generous benefit packages, and to the extent that that shift of workload shifts other work off their plates that they cannot do in the time available, you are shifting from people who work very frugally to people who work much less frugally. This is not a time in the economic history of this county to consider such a thing, either from the standpoint of processing it or from the standpoint of implementing it. Instead of looking at should the Subdivision Review Board have another meeting a month, look at maybe the Planning Commission should schedule another meeting a month. That would be a much more frugal option. It would simply be the per diem for each commissioner. The staff time in terms of being at the commission meetings would be the same whether they were addressing commission or SRB, but you would not be taking high-paid county staff, putting more stuff on their plate, and probably ending up hiring more staff to take care of what falls off their plates as a result. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Istar Holliday, followed by Jesse Arnold.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, Board. Good morning. My name is Istar Holliday, and today I'm speaking as an individual. However, in my role as Land Use Chair of the South County Advisory Council, I have worked with both the planners and the Planning Commission and understand their roles. Although I don't argue the education, preparation, and dedication of our county planners, I find there is an inherent conflict in their roles. On one hand, they're the salaried employees of the taxpayer, morally contracted to promote the common welfare. On the other hand, their very salaries are dependent on monies flowing into the county from development fees. No money, no jobs. What has provided a workable balance of these two opposing pulls through the years has been the overview of the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, who are knowledgeable representatives of the community who stand outside the planning department and have encouraged the input of the general public in addition to the neighbors of various projects that would be directly affected personally and financially by new developments. Their sessions are regularly held, open through the television process, and provide the transparency necessary to the confidence of the community in the democratic process. Although D1 is advertised as lightening the load of the overworked Planning Commission, what D1 actually does is transfer what is an objective process of overview to one where one arm of the Planning Department rules on the work of another arm of the Planning Department, removing the objective reviewer from the loop. However efficient this may be, this appears to be unacceptable inbreeding, in my opinion. A process of checks and balances may often be inefficient, but it is necessary to the survival of our local government as we envision it, and I urge you to deny this authorization to proceed in this direction and have the Planning Department find another way to deal with the Planning Commission's and Board's heavy load that provides for the continuation of diverse review boards that hold regularly scheduled, open, televised sessions that encourage community input on all land use issues and make objective decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holliday. Jesse Arnold, followed by Linda Seeley.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson and members of the board. Sunshine is a good thing. I think the Planning Commission provides sunshine we need. It seems to me that this may have been motivated by what happened with the Cayucas Viewshed issue, you folks all know what happens, but in other words, your appointed planning commissioners came back with an ordinance that the board didn't support. They went with the developer's ordinance that was developed by their lawyer, kind of right here ad hoc.
Actually, it's right there.
Yeah, right here. Okay. So this seems to me a response to that, but I think we need to keep the Planning Commission. They did a good job then. It's a process that we need. I concur with Mr. Hawley's remarks, especially Mr. Greening's remarks, and also Istar Holliday. They all said it very well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. And we have Linda Seeley, followed by Bob Rose.
Good morning. My name is Linda Seeley. I heard this morning
your staff talking about the Planning Commission having more complex issues before it. And to me, it seems that because there are more complex issues before the Planning Commission, that is the very reason that the Planning Commission needs to hear these issues, because we have a complex situation in this county with the push toward development and growth, as opposed to the recognition of our resources, of the limitation of some of the resources that we have. That Title 21, 22, and 23 are very important statutes that have to be adhered to throughout the state. And expediting a process is not necessarily a positive thing. Sometimes slowing down and looking at the issues in a more careful way actually proves to be more expeditious and I'm totally in agreement with the Ms. Holloway, I believe her name is, that we need to keep this in a more democratic form, that the Planning Commission serves a real purpose, that they sit and they listen with a more objective view than the staff can possibly do. I respect the fact that the Planning Commission is overworked, but maybe that in itself is an indicator of a rush to change our planning our planning process. So I think that one thing that's really, really important to do is for you to talk to the Planning Commission itself and ask what they think about this. I know you're planning on having meetings with them, but to me, their input is extremely valuable, and I would urge you to deny this authorization today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seeley. Bob Rose, followed by George Sullivan.
I'm Bob Rose, and that was a great segue to me because I've been on the Planning Commission for the last 8 years, presently the chair. I'm speaking only for myself, and I have been chair of the Planning Commission for 2.5 years of those 8 years. Of the proposals that I heard here this morning, the only real problem I see is with the track map, and I think Mr. Hogue recognized that, how complex track maps can sometimes be, and the appropriate review authority for that needs to be talked about. The other problem I see with the proposal, it's really not going to change much. The things you plan on or considering moving are less than 10% of our time. Why do we have a backlog? Two reasons. One, you're giving us an awful lot of ordinance amendments. They take a lot of time. They take a lot of public input. And the second one is we talk too much. That's what those guys talk. That's not me. Not me. But that's a positive thing. You know, recognize we're a 3-2 board or commission. Next year, we're probably going to be a 2-3 commission. But what that does is some member of the public comes up with their idea, and he's likely to find a receptive commissioner who can develop that idea in a little longer than the 3 minutes that member of the public has got. So if you transfer those controversial projects to something like the Subdivision Review Board, which has been brought up already, is a staff with from a single agency. They tend to have a single review mindset. You don't get that controversy. I can only point out to the Trader Joe project in Templeton, which was a Subdivision Review project. Thank God I don't get blamed for it. There's a lot of issues that didn't get talked about: parking, hours of operation, traffic, access, that sort of thing. So what's my solution? Got a couple possibilities I'd like you to consider. One is have an additional meeting per month for the Planning Commission and let that meeting strictly be for ordinances. We waste a lot of time with the ordinances because we hear the same projects 5 different times. We have the same speakers coming up. improving their inputs, but still, over and over again, we get the public comment, we don't get enough time to actually deliberate. The second one, a little more controversial, consider having a second planning commission. We're not the only county that would consider this. You could have another planning commission that only discussed ordinance changes and general plan amendments. The other one would just strictly do projects. And you could work it out where you'd swap between the two of them every year or 2 years or something like that. And we thank you for considering this.
Excuse me, Mr. Rose, Supervisor Gibson has a question or comment.
Actually, Commissioner Rose pretty well covered it. A pleasure to see you, sir, and like you, I'm not much of a talker myself when I was on the Planning Commission. It was those other three people.
But you've changed.
Yeah, well, I like to think that we grow in our public and our private lives. I was looking to see about your specifics, and those were two of them. I would presume that some subset of your commissioners would be amenable to sitting down with supervisors and staff and brainstorming some other ideas that might be part of the equation of making the public process still open, democratic, but perhaps a little more timely.
I can only speak for myself, but I assume they would be. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Rose, I was going to ask you before you offered, as a year member of the Planning Commission, if you might have some suggestions on how we overcome this issue. You know, the problem we're trying to solve here is that it takes 4 to 6 months for a project to even get before you. And obviously you've suggested a couple of changes. Are there others that you might want to throw in the pot here to stir, or are those the major ones you think that would significantly streamline?
Those, are the, big those okay. are the big ones.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Mr. Sullivan, followed by John Tannehill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is George Sullivan, a resident of the Santa Margarita area. And I'm very much an advocate in volunteerism and public being involved in local government. And I really prefer to see a win-win mentality in government and rather than a cost-cost. And I would see this direction going towards the cost-cost as far as Mr. Rose and others have already previously stated, that this is just going to cost our county more money. And the term streamlining, I think it's probably digesting is probably a better word on our process and applications. A point that I would rather see occur, and Mr. Rose also demonstrated the fact that we could probably have more meetings, but if we're going to spend any money whatsoever, maybe we should consider providing a salary to those planning commissioners and having weekly meetings if necessary as the workload requires. Decommissioning the commission, I think, is a poor step to take, and I certainly appreciate our public involvement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. John Tannehill, followed by David Nelson.
Good morning. John Tannehill, representing the Pankey and Tannehill families. We've had a sand permit going with the county now for almost up to 4 years. The process is extremely costly. It's very slow. We have approved mitigated negative deck by the planning staff. We have been delayed once now by planning commission, by last minute protest. We work with federal agencies, we work with state agencies, we work with planning staff. We've met all their requirements. It's the time consuming. We work with board members and commissioners, and then they leave the board. Now we have to work with new board members, new commissioners. Bob Roos has some good ideas about more meetings, more staff, more commissioners. And I like the idea that you are looking at streamlining your operation. Not everything has to go to public comment. We have many citizens that individually go to staff, spend many hours with staff individually with their ideas and complaints. The public is invited throughout the entire process, and anything you do here to help streamline it with public access, because they already have public access, is beneficial to them and the county and the applicants. if it becomes so infeasible, so expensive to do anything in this county, salaries are going to suffer. You won't have projects that hire your people in the county, and you're just going to have a stagflation. It's happening in the San Joaquin Valley to the farmers. Their water is evaporating. They can't get hearings. They have the same problems we're experiencing here. 3-4 years for permits is either up or down vote. Don't drag us out. The staff knew in the second year what was going on and was it approvable. If it's not approvable, say no. If it is approvable, go through the work, get it all in front of you, have your public hearings, and yes, up and down, you're the supervisors. You should have that vote. It shouldn't be held up in lower levels over and over years and years. That's your job. You ought to take control of it and give them an up and down vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tannehill. David Nelson, followed by Jerry Bunin.
David Nelson, and I'm here. I agree with most of the other speakers, so I won't take up. I'll try to use less time, but I'd ask you to put this authorization off. It's something that maybe needs to be fixed in another way. I don't want to see the public taken out of this process at all. And Mr. Greenlee was talking about the lowest paid people being the Planning Commission, but we the citizens that come before you and try to help our county grow in a really sound and sane way so that it benefits all of us citizens shouldn't be cut out of this process. You know, staff time can be way better used for other things. You might increase our fees so that we can put more staff people on if we need them. I mean, these problems come in when developers come in and they want to maximize profit, and then you need citizens to come in to kind of balance that to maximize profit, but yet, you know, keep our sane environment that makes San Luis a special place in the state. In spite of all of our environmental problems, you know, we are one of the places that people long to live in, no matter how bad the background is. It's still a great place to live. And don't cut the people out of this system. It's really important. It's not going to benefit this staff, as you saw, for the 10% that they're going to save, to cut the voices of the people out of this, because we'll bring things to the table that the staff's not going to bring, because it's going to add a workload to them, because they're going to have to dot their I's and cross their T's. And that's what we're here for. And, you know, I'm not complaining about putting my time in. I think I'm privileged to have the time to do it. So let's not go with this. Just send the staff back to do their own jobs. And if there's a way to streamline this, let's figure that out. Maybe put a citizens commission together to figure it out, along with some of these planners. Don't utilize our planning commission to figure these things out. We don't need them. Do your job and let them do their job, and let the citizens of the county do our job, and we will. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Jerry Bunin, followed by Dr. Mary Fullwood.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I like this. I agree with Eric Greening, Bob Roos, and Supervisor Gibson, which is an interesting combination. You know, we're in the middle of a housing slump. There's very few projects that are coming forward, and yet even from when the project application is ready, it's taking 4 to 6 months for it to get on the agenda. We're not trying to get around the Planning Commission. We're trying to get in front of them. It already takes 3 to 5 years for a project to get approved. So I would like to suggest that, I don't know exactly what all are going to be proposed, but that the direction to the commission is to explore all the to the staff, is to explore all the options. I think that Eric was right, and I think that Bob is right. An extra meeting, whether it's an extra meeting a month or every other month or a quarterly meeting that focuses on something, is very helpful to getting on the agenda and getting through the process. And it's not just simply not getting on the agenda. It's you sit out here for 6 hours waiting to get your item heard, and then you get continued. So there's additional cost and it's additional frustration. So a meeting that's set up once a month to take care of relatively routine items or
projects or simply address ordinances, I think it would be a good step. I know personally I would like to see it, that meeting set aside for the policy issues, because trying to do these policy issues in like 90-minute segments is really frustrating. You know, I mean, yep, if you, as a member of the public, you do try to say something different and move it along, but I read like 8 or 9 different drafts of some of these ordinances that were just minor changes. So I think the system could be improved, and I do support looking at all the options and trying to come up with new ones and make it what's best for everyone. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Bunin. Dr. Mary Fullwood, followed by Janine Jacobs.
Hi, for the most part, or my name is Dr. Mary Fullwood. For the most part, I agree with the sentiments of most of the public speakers. I think the primary piece I want to add is that before this board, the public hearings are aired and aired and televised, and that's a very important issue for our county and for the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. We've seen just in the recent years what feels like very fast development. On your end, it might look slow, but as a person who loves this area, there are things that just don't make sense happening frequently. Like, why do we need 2 very large pet stores literally walking distance from one another in large development complexes? So the issue seems before you seems to be, how do you streamline the planning commission and planning process, development process, and I would try to front end it as much as you can with the designers of development projects and keep it with them until it's really ready to come before you. And also, I don't know if it's possible to overlap with the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, but they're creating an LID center, or involved with creating an LID center, and possibly that clearinghouse can assist with taking a little pressure off of you. Thanks.
Are you suggesting that we partner with the Regional Water Quality Control Board?
On LID.
Rhetorical question. Janine Jacobs, followed by Andrew Christie. Ms. Jacobs.
Can you hear me?
Maybe speak up a little bit, please.
Okay. Well, Eric Greening sounded like he had a lot of good suggestions. I know it's up to you whether or not to bifurcate the minor use permits, but I would say if it did go to the subcommittee, it would be nice to have a streamlined public hearing access to any comments, maybe the website or a blog or something like that would be nice. And I think every project should have their own blog if they have a website or some access, some link from your website to their PR person, so that at least their PR person could get back to the public, that kind of thing. Other than that, I just felt that from the minor use transfer of the permit process, that it wouldn't be a public hearing. There may be some issues that the public, maybe a neighbor or something, would really want to discuss with the developer, and there may be a mediator between them, something along those lines. Thanks so much.
I need you to state your name for the record.
Oh, Janine Jacobs.
Very good. Thank you. Andrew Christie, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Supervisors. I'm Andrew Christie. I'm Chapter Director for the Santa Lucia Chapter of the Sierra Club, speaking on behalf of our 2,500 members in San Luis Obispo County. And how nice it would be if life were more efficient, if our schools or our courts ran more like automotive assembly lines or slaughterhouses, raw material goes in, trained workers perform a series of set specific tasks, and a finished product comes out at the other end. But maybe that's not the best way to run a legal system or an educational system or the land use planning process. Maybe the Republican form of democracy and citizen rule requires a greater degree of discretionary decision-making, accountability, and public participation than a sausage factory. The proposal before you will take decisions on tract maps and subdivision approvals, the source and the headwaters from which all other land use planning flows, out of the hands of the Planning Commission and hand them to staff. This proposal remakes the fundamental structure of land use planning on the basis of 4 pages of narrative. You are being asked to vote to process a proposal of that magnitude on the basis of this level of detail. This board has some experience with proposals that should not be processed. The Rural Plan Development Ordinance comes to mind. You did eventually come to the conclusion that thereby not doing so avoided laying out for a six-figure EIR on a plan that should have been DOA. You have the chance now to make that wise decision right up front. You need not embark on a time and energy and money-consuming process of a general plan amendment for what should be a minor administrative fix. Do not send this to the Planning Commission, ironically adding to their workload in the middle of a budget crunch while the county is short-staffed. To lighten the workload of the Planning Commission, simply withdraw this item, adopt the second of staff's 3 recommendations, and allow the commission to discuss it at their next public workshop. Let them decide if they are overburdened, and if so, what they might do to speed up the process. Let them do the job you appointed them to do, and let staff continue to do their job, providing advice and counsel to the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Christie, when you suggested staff's second recommendation, are you referring to the ones that they displayed during the hearing today?
On the PowerPoint, yeah.
Very good. Thank
you. A Planning Commission workshop.
Very good. Thank you. Let's see, where are we here? Michael Nguyen, followed by Liana Fora.
Good morning again. I'm Mike Nguyen, and I'm from Napomo still.
Have you been home recently?
Haven't moved. Certainly the process is very time-consuming, and the charge that you gave your planning department in May is something that does need serious attention. I'm pleased that you're moving ahead. And yet, I will join the others that have urged you not to authorize the GPA today, but rather to send it back to staff with some very specific directions. I think the authorization stage, even though it's not the final stage, needs to have far more clarity and better definition before you finally adopt it, and I hope you won't do that today. The truth must be said that some of the topics that take a long time in the Planning Commission simply require that much time. They're major issues, they have a lot of detail, that you can't just whip through them quickly, and if you smooth it out so that such things do go through fast, they're not going to have the kind of scrutiny they need. I greatly appreciate your staff's delicacy in not saying that some of us people like to talk too much. But that can be a problem, and that's a matter for the commissioners, and especially the chair of the commission, to try to keep in line. Some of the delays clearly, I think, involve abuse of process. I'm not saying that specifically about any individual person or process, but at times I think it's clear that objections that are being thrown up are not substantive objections, and perhaps one of the ideas that you'll look at is some way of giving a little better shape to some of those things. And last, some of them were delayed because the proposal that was given to the commission was seriously and in some cases fatally flawed. I would urge, again, one of the things that you look at as you look at the number of items that Mr. Ovitt, Mr. Roos, and Mr. Gibson suggested, that you look at when you contract out to have some work done by a contractor and they give you work that is seriously defective, that should be fixed at their expense. You should not have to pay them to repair those things. And I could give you detailed examples, I'm sure you know of them already, of a number of things that were delayed seriously because they were simply wrong, and it took far too long to get them straightened out. So with those comments, I do hope that you will not authorize today, but will give the staff clear direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Liana Forrest, followed by Richard Cranstor.
My name is Liana Forrest. I live in Los Osos. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. The argument for this amendment is to lighten the workload and to have a more efficient processing of the planning process. And we've heard it called streamlining. as a citizen, I'm concerned for this process effect on democracy, the importance of a diversity of voices being heard. And as a citizen who is a social scientist, who has focused my whole life work on study and implementation of the process of social change, I have additional strong concerns for the process of governance in this county and beyond. In the name of efficiency in the past, we have allowed special interests to have a greater voice than the majority of the people. In the name of efficiency, we have abdicated our responsibility to the ecosphere, the biosphere, the atmosphere, and the sphere of human needs. We have looked aside while our air, water, and land become polluted, poisoned, or lost, while our people and animals become less healthy. By listening to fewer voices, we have often taken the easier and more convenient route and reaped many dreadful consequences that cannot be undone. By not taking a holistic approach to problem solving, where the interests and concerns of all stakeholders, human and non-human, are heard, we lose out on the opportunity for more creative and stress and successful solutions. Again, in the name of efficiency and speed, we have not only ignored the voices around us, but we have silenced the voices within that counsel us to take a more balanced and discerning approach that remind us of the needs of future generations who must pay for our mistakes. These are the debts, the trespasses, and the transgressions from which we can never be absolved. I implore you not to take this step backwards to an era of disastrous decisions that have led this planet and its inhabitants to the dangerous point of no return. This issue may seem as a small step, and we're all aware of the metaphor of the increasing heat on the frog that gets boiled. Please think of these amendments as only possibilities among many, and to think of the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Forrest. Richard Cranstor, followed by Henrietta Groot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I originally was going to, as a poli-sci prop, I would have to take a 3 minutes plus. Having been here this morning and listening to all the people in front of me, I realize that what I have to say can be said in a very few words. I think what concerns many of us, certainly myself, were the three words, authorize the processing. That raised whatever the metaphor, red flags or whatever. I think the person who introduced us said, no, this isn't really, you're overly concerned about what we're hoping to do, et cetera. I think there is an understanding among all of us that brainstorming is great. When you talk about streamlining and authorizing and processing and so on, that gets people very, very worried. And I'm sure after the public comment is finished and the commissioner or the members of the board go back in with their comments, I'm sure something will come out which does not have the danger which many people perceive. But certainly we don't want to be in a place where we're refusing to look at anything. That would be foolish. But I also remind you, and I hope I'm right, and if I'm wrong, please correct me. I think it was Winston Churchill who talked about democracy being the worst form of government except for all others. And I would have that as my litmus test as I went into discussion after public comment is over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cranstor. Henrietta Groot, followed by Ed Eby.
Good morning. My name is Henrietta Groot. I live in Cayucas. I want to add my voice to those who are calling for your doing the utmost effort to protect the democratic process. In whatever you do, whatever changes you choose to make, please keep that in mind. The public needs to give input, and we need to give input early. Don't have us only speaking in the final stage of the process, because then you might have to rearrange too many things. I'm with Dave Nelson. Public advice is free. We give you our creative ideas, and you need them. This is a time when we're looking at smart growth. What does it mean? Does your staff always follow that? We're having this idea of low-impact development. These are things that we need to track and keep an eye on and implement in whatever projects are happening. And then there's climate change. Are you sure that everybody keeps their eye on these issues all the time? No, I'm sure not. And that's why you have us. One more thing. Creativity requires enough talking. You don't need a lot of BSing, but you do need enough talking about the issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Group. Eddie B., followed by Patty Davis.
Good afternoon. Good morning. I'm Ed Eby. I live in Napomo. And I would like to tell you that this proposal is sending the decision-making process in the wrong direction. Instead of giving the Subdivision Review Board more power, it should have less or be abandoned. The whole concept of county staff members comprising the Subdivision Review Board making discretionary decisions on other county staff members' actions is counter to our legislative process that requires elected officials and their appointees to be the final decision makers. The current Subdivision Review Board places county staff members in the compromising position of passing judgment on the work of their colleagues. This taints the decision-making process. The Planning Commission certainly has proved itself more than able to make sound decisions. If the county staff is equally able, they could be appointed to the Planning Commission. If the issue is time spent on each issue, let the Planning Commission meet more often, has been suggested by other people. Their pay rate is certainly less per issue than that of the county staff. The money spent on the environmental review and processing of this proposal is supposed to be absorbed by the current planning budget. Does the planning department have that much surplus in funding? What happened to the budget problem? You would probably find that increasing the workload of the low-paid planning commission and decreasing the workload of the high-paid planning staff would be a cost-saving measure. At any rate, this proposal should be stopped dead in its tracks. And elimination of the Subdivision Review Board should be examined as a more democratic and cost-saving measure. I'd like to point out one more thing. In an excellent letter that you were sent by Susan Harvey, she points out that the application workload is at an all-time low right now. So if the application workload is at an all-time low and the process isn't moving forward, it's maybe the process, not the workload. So I would like you to consider some of the other proposals that were made, such as increase the amount of time or increasing the amount of Planning Commission meetings or other cost-effective and streamlined methods. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eby. Patty Davis, followed by Robin Chapman.
Good morning. I'm Patty Davis, and I live in the North County. I represent myself and the Salinas River Neighborhood Protective Association. I'm one of those people that gets 30-day notice to somebody who has 4 years to prepare, plan, and still can't get it right. We have been very involved as a neighborhood for 20 years. We've worked with the planning staff on issues that are very important to us. The staff has been very helpful, professional, but we want our day always to be before the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors. On our current issue of mining, we're looking to have it put in the appropriate site, and we want you to consider what it would do if we could not come before you to fight these issues. Having met with many planning commissioners, we know they have a different way of looking at projects than the staff. The staff is overworked and burdened and continues to be the county fall guy. The Planning Commission is a citizen's link between public and supervisors. Salinas River neighbors ask you not to authorize this change at this time. And remember, haste
makes waste. And why are we doing this now with a new board and a new direction on the horizon? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Robin Chapman, followed by Susan Harvey.
Robin Chapman, San Miguel. I would like to echo the sentiments of Mr. Greening and Ms. Halliday, in which she stated that there's an inherent conflict of interest if staff, if this process is put to staff rather than the Planning Commission. Furthermore, I'd like to add 2 points. One is I am aware of a recent development in which staff proposed a negative declaration for a project in which the county biologist had a 4 or 5 page list of deficiencies in the applicant's environmental report or environmental assessment. Despite that, the county staff said negative declaration. I don't want staff policing itself. I think there needs to be another layer, and that's what the Planning Commission is for. That's what public input is for. That project was one that had been in the works, I understand, for a number of years. I think what would streamline processes like that would be not a change in review or public input, but in direction to staff to follow sound planning procedures and guidelines, not the wishes of a few well-placed position persons within the county who want to see a project either go or not go. It should be objective, not subjective. My last comment is that 3 to 5 years is a long time to be in the planning process, and I would agree. I would agree that individually that seems like a lot of time and a lot of expense, but collectively I don't think so. When we're talking about a huge development that changes not only the use of the land, but it changes the character of that particular piece of property and the community around it, 3 to 5 years is a very short period of time. Even our most long-lived persons have short periods of time on this earth, and looking farther ahead is necessary. And if it takes 3 to 5 years for staff to get it right and for the public to have their input and for a project to be done in a compatible manner for the environment and use, then so be it. I'm sorry, that needs to happen. So I would ask you not to process this any further today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chapman. Susan Harvey, followed by Dorothy Jennings.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Susan Harvey, and I'm speaking for North County Watch today. I hope you had an opportunity to look at the letter that we submitted, because there are a number of suggestions there and issues that I don't really want to cover all of them today. I would like to point out that I think the community response to this shows in what high regard the Planning Commission is held by the public, regardless of who sits on the board. I hope you keep that in mind. Here are some suggestions that might result in time savings. Staff could streamline the on-hold process by more clearly communicating application requirements instead of piecemealing. Staff could establish a procedure for periodically requalify approved consultants to minimize challenges to the other agencies or the public resulting from substandard work. Staff could promote streamlining if ordinances contain clearly stated rules. There are too many ordinances called tools, which are a loose set of guidelines requiring extensive study and interpretation by staff and therefore interaction with applicants. Ordinance tools translate into extraordinarily long application processing times and increase the complexity of hearing deliberations. Many of our general plan policies do not have the benefit of implementation into ordinances. This leaves broad areas of policy open to interpretation that should rightly be subject to Planning Commission oversight. The time could be better spent translating some of these policies into ordinances so there isn't so much interpretation and guessing, by applicants and the staff. The board should consider the alternative of making the SRB member board's appointees, as are the planning commissioners. And I don't know if this is the appropriate time to suggest this, but if you're considering a community board for looking at these issues, I'd like to offer, this is unbeknownst to him, of course, and if he has time to do it, that Mike Wynn be a part of that, because he has dealt with these issues on both sides because of his long service to the county, and I have a high regard for his, you know, common sense in these issues. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. Dorothy Jennings, followed by Ann McMahon.
I'm Dorothy Jennings, and I live in Templeton. I will be reading in part from a letter that I sent to you. You would benefit by having a wide range of potential solutions to consider. For example, you might consider whether the public and each elected supervisor would be better served if members of the Subdivision Review Board were qualified volunteers appointed by supervisors, as your planning commissioners now are. SRB members, senior specialists from different county departments and different disciplines, now meet monthly and must spend considerable time preparing for a hearing. If each SRB member visits each project site, as I know your planning commissioners often do, these key senior staff could collectively be spending at least 1,000 hours annually on this non-primary task. The proposal now before you would require significantly more time from staff, perhaps up to twice as much. A more productive use of specialist time is as consulting experts. As consulting experts, they already support the board and planning commission and could easily extend that function to the subdivision review board as needed. The net savings to the county would be considerable. Appointed SRB members would have insights related to the district they represent. As they review discretionary projects, appointees would better understand comments and recommendations from the community advisory councils. Among solutions you review, please consider having your board appoint members to the subdivision review board.
Thank you, Ms. Jennings. Ann McMahon, followed by Reggie Dion.
Supervisor Patterson and supervisors, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I share the concerns expressed by many of the speakers before me regarding the proposed amendments. This proposal seems to me to be misguided for a variety of reasons. At the very least, it seems to oversimplify what is really a complex set of variables in an effort to find some quick fix. Based on the assessment of the issue, basing the assessment of this issue or problem simply on numbers of meetings, items per meeting, and continuance is like comparing apples, oranges, bananas, and pineapples. You are being asked today to authorize a potential fix without all the information you need to decide if there really even is a problem or if this is the problem. I have been really impressed with your Planning Commission, as many others have stated here. I greatly appreciate the very thoughtful and thorough approach the Commission has taken on many important issues, including study sessions on a variety of ordinances and the proposed project regarding Santa Margarita Ranch. Each of your commissioners has contributed in their own way to the high quality of those deliberations, from which the public process has greatly benefited. Your Planning Commission has illustrated time and time again that the process can take time in order to reach the best possible decisions. The fact that some applicants and possibly staff may sometimes find the process frustrating or overly time-consuming is really not reason enough for these amendments that are before you today. Perhaps your attention might better be spent on assessing how to save staff time and expedite public hearings by working more with applicants who have unrealistic expectations and insist upon pursuing development proposals that are actually inconsistent with the general plan or the county's own ordinances and policies before the project reaches the Planning Commission or you.
Oftentimes it's those controversial projects that you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole that are the ones that become so long, so drawn out and time-consuming, and oftentimes can result in appeals and lawsuits. If applicants were more willing to play by the rules because they knew that the rules actually meant something, and if staff was supported in enforcing those rules early on, we might not be having this discussion today. The proposed amendments have the potential to seriously compromise the integrity of the public process. At the very least, the Planning Commission should be given the courtesy of providing input into a more comprehensive analysis. And I would just like to offer that maybe this is not the problem that you need to be looking at. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McMahon. Reggie Dion.
Mr. Chairman, the rest of the board, thank you. My name is Reggie Dion. I'm a member of the South County Advisory Committee, but I'm speaking for myself. There's been a lot of very good comments, and I can't really add too much to it. I just want to make the main point that I think this proposal should be rejected, and whoever should be sent back to try to work on streamlining the procedures, as a number of people have said. And I don't really have much more to add to it other than that I object to this proposal, and I wish you luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dion. My last request to speak is Greg Nestor.
Morning, Greg Nestor. I appreciate the opportunity. I think I'm probably one of the few people in the room that make the payment on the property when we're going through this long-lasting process, and that part of what needs to be considered is the economics on the landowner-developer's side of the projects also. If you had a project today and you wanted to get onto the Planning Commission, it would take about 6 to 8 months. One particular project that I have, that payment's about $3,600 a month, so 8 times 36, pretty good chunk of change to wait for your opportunity to engage in the public process. I have 7 projects that I'm processing right now, so there's some more math to consider. You have to have 7 projects to make a living in this county and the city agencies that we deal with, because it is a long process. I've been here 25 years this week, and I used to tell people that we would process maps that were consistent with the zoning and the general plan in 16 to 18 months, and I would usually do it in 18 to 20. Now I think that it's more of a 3-year process as a minimum. I can take you to projects that we built 5, 10, and 15 years ago, and without the calendar applied to them, wonder what major differences that those projects reveal. One, they cost a lot more to build because of the time frame, the amount of studies, and things that are applied to that. I live here. I'm going to live here. My kids live here. I care about this county as much as anybody here, and have tried to do only quality development across the board. We're all standing here today because the system needs to be enhanced or bettered some way, and this is a start. So if this isn't the answer today, at least it can be a continued process to find those engagement with participants who pass through the system would be recommended. I'd be happy to share my experiences and provide any help that we can. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Nestor. That concludes my request to speak and public comment, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board and ask staff if they have any comments that they want to make relative to public comment, and if not, I'll ask my colleagues if they have comments. So anything specific from staff at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warren Hogue again. I think my initial presentation covered most of those points that were discussed. If there's anything that you think we didn't cover, I'd be happy to answer that. I also look to my colleagues in the front row and see if they would like to address anything. They're all okay. Shaking their heads no.
All right. Very good. I noticed they were taking copious notes, so...
As was I.
Busy with that. Supervisor Ovid?
Thank you. I'm just going to lead off because I want to go over some things that I want to make sure that we're clear that we're not doing. One is we're not dealing with specific applications, and I heard three or four of those thrown out here today. Two is we're not eliminating the public process. In anything we're talking about, we're definitely not eliminating the public process. We're not decommissioning the Planning Commission, which I heard said. If in fact is what we're trying to do is open it up so they have the capability of dealing with the more complex issues that are here today. We are not eliminating or changing any current rules or regulations or ordinances pertaining to any application. And in one sense, I wanted to say this, we're not building widgets. This is not what this county does. And in fact, actually, the other one that kind of struck my as odd is that in this department and in this position that we're in, we deal in apples and oranges and pineapples, and they have to cross and they have to mix, and you have to know what the difference between them. One person said, "Do your job," and I've always thought that the reason I'm here is to make a decision. The other reason that we're here is we have a responsibility of not only the budget, but to look at the overall process of how this county operates, not just this department, but all. And we tend sometimes to look at the petal on the flower instead of how that flower looks to the relationship to the field. And so we tend to overlook those that are the simple process things, and we get into the more complex, and we think that that's the issue that's before it. 1994, 96, somewhere, we went through this change process before. And a lot of the same statements that were made here today were made back there. We're going to lose control. The public's not going to have an opportunity. And yet what we did is we shifted the load to different areas. Now, I don't disagree with you that maybe the subdivision review committee could have been made up of partly staff or partly appointed people or all appointed people. We need to look at that. It's been 14 years today. We have not even looked into the planning process and what's happening. And I think that's what we're asked to do today. The budget became a reason. That decision was made back before any elections happened. It was an issue that needed to be done probably years before that. It's an interesting thing that any of these departments, you know, we deal with customers. Our customers are the public. They're the public in many different ways, those who come to speak, but those who come to do business. If we cannot get that business done in a reasonable amount of time, it's costing not only the economy, it's costing our planning process, and as we can see, even our budgets. I think one of the biggest problems that we have today is we're not willing to make a decision, and that is what this process is. And understand is we are in a process. And that process is breaking down. That process should not go into an abyss where nothing happens. And I think today we have one suggestion. And to leave here today without moving forward in some direction is going to be, a travesty for the future, because we need to look at this process. I think it's an abomination when somebody comes in for a simple permit, meets all the rules and regulations, and ends up taking them 9 months to a year to get before a hearing body to get a final decision is the problem we have. We're not serving our public when that happens. And that's an individual person as well as a major developer. That's what this planning department's there for, is to work with those. There are other issues the planning department deals with, and that is what is clogging the planning commission at this time, are those policy issues that they must also deal with. I think the only thing that we're looking at here is to take those specific items that are less processing time, that meet all the requirements, and move them to a position, whatever you want to call it, to allow them to get done in a reasonable time. In the legal staff, it's called due process in a reason. And here, I think we're lacking that. And I think what was being recommended may not be the direction, but in order for us to do anything at all, we have to give recommendations to that specific, and in this case, the planning department, to move forward in some direction. And that's what we should walk out of here is with a direction on how we want to move forward.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Ovid. I agree that we certainly do need to take action. I think my colleagues agree with that as well. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, and I agree as well. I just happen to think that authorizing the specific amendments that are listed in our staff report is not the thing we should do today, and for a couple of reasons. First and foremost is because the Planning Commission wasn't consulted about this, and I think they, as our appointed officials, are in the best position to suggest to us how they might be able to move their agenda forward. We heard from Commissioner Rose as to his willingness for extra meetings, reorganization of their workflow, and a number of other things. I think the thing that strikes me about the specific suggestions that are here is that by Mr. Rose and others' estimation, the shifting of different sorts of projects to different sorts of hearing bodies doesn't really save all that much time. And listening to a variety of public testimony and having the knowledge, as I do, of some of the paths, I think the problem is much more complex than simply what kinds of permit or subdivision applications and how many general plan amendment and ordinance amendments the Planning Commission hears. So I'd like to go back and revisit, rather than an authorization to process, I'd like to see if this board could come to some consensus on direction to staff to pursue this problem, or to pursue what we need as increasing efficiency in our efforts to do county government, consistent with an open democratic process and a thorough and careful examination of various projects and amendments relative to our general plan and policies. So I would suggest that we direct staff to work with representatives of the Planning Commission, of this board, and of applicant groups to look at the whole process, start to finish, how the department accepts and processes applications, what can be done to improve communication between the department and applicants, what the Planning Commission can do in terms of agenda management, whether it is to hold ordinance and amendment hearings on one of their two monthly meetings and project considerations on the other, to what extent we might add a meeting once every quarter, or whatever the Planning Commission and this group thinks is appropriate, to consider other ideas, both big and small. I think the question of whether the Subdivision Review Board should have one or more members of the public appointed to it is one that's worthy of consideration. And with that sort of public representation, whether that changes the kinds of items that they hear. And another one, a relatively small one that every once in a while takes a considerable amount of time, is the matter of how we do general plan conformity reports. And my idea there, as we talked about when we were discussing Oceana Dunes, is there's nothing in the government code that tells us we have to have a thumbs up or thumbs down in conformity, that we could approach conformity as if it were an informational item like an EIR, and that's a lot of technical detail there that we could get into. But I think there are a number of promising avenues, and I think we have heard many of them from the public, who I'd like to compliment for well thought out and thoughtful comments.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Supervisor Lenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think our goal should be to examine all the options. We've heard today that I don't think the planning staff came with any specific rules or something concrete. They said we need to consider all the options. I think we should remember that our objective here is to improve our customer service. We're all customers regardless of which side of the issue you fall on. When you identify problems to say that you don't get an answer in 3 or 4 or 5 years, we're not doing our job. Supervisor Over illustrated that part of our job is to make a decision. It's also to make it in a timely fashion and ensure that we've had adequate public input, followed due process, dotted the I's and crossed the T's. From my perspective, it seems that the system has failed, that we've become too process-driven and lost sight of our service. Our service is to listen to all sides, all parties, and process that information in as most efficient and effective way possible. So I hope today that we can direct the planning department to go ahead and examine the options, come back at a date specified after they have the opportunity to meet with the planning commission. They didn't have a chance this last time to do that, but they're in the process of doing their analysis, for lack of a better term, and they're going to come up with the best information they can based on the input from the public, based on the input from county staff, and also based on input from us. So I hope that that's what we're able to do today, to completely go forward and give clear directions and support the planning department in their effort to give better customer service, because I think that's what this is all about.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Lenthal. Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Change is always challenging, and when you throw in a word or two, authorization versus direction, it does raise a few additional red flags. When we have general plan amendments and we authorize the process, we expect that the grand finale is going to be authorized rather than we still have a discretion to turn it down. So I'm at a comfort zone if there will be a direction, but going back to the makeup of the subdivision review board, this has come to our attention times before, at least twice that the board has considered to look into it. With all due respect to the professional people that we have on the subdivision review board, it does give you the bias that it's coming a recommendation from yet another staff member, and another staff member has to make that decision. I'm not in support of just having maybe two appointed per people and the rest still staff people, because that is still, if you leave three of them there, then still three might be looked upon as being the bias, and maybe they're the majority. If you're going to do any changes, again, with all due respect to our staff, I'm all supportive of having all five of them be appointed, just like we appoint planning commissioners. I think that will take that concept of being biased out of the picture. And again, I don't say this because they're not qualified people who already sit on subdivision review board. It's just the public expectation of what the final outcome is. And I think what Bob Rose said, it also makes sense that if we have either another commission or another time within a given month that they meet separately to address the issues of ordinances versus land use concerns that come or projects that come in front of them.
Good.
But I do want that whatever the decisions or the concept they're going to bring back to the supervisors, that the process is not only just a planning commission, but it does go through the local advisory councils for input and an understanding and an educational period prior it coming back to us to have a final decision made by this board.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Sajjan. And if I may, I'll just comment here briefly on some of the comments I've heard this morning. And I want to echo what Mr. Greening said about the commitment that planning commissioners make. Certainly, they're probably, maybe. They commit a tremendous amount of time if they're doing their job appropriately, and I happen to think that we currently have an excellent planning commission. I know them individually, and they take their responsibility very seriously, and they do the preparation and the work that's required to render good decisions, and I appreciate that. And some suggestions were made that perhaps we have additional planning commission meetings, which would impact the individuals on the planning commission currently who devote a significant, they're all professional people who devote a significant amount of their time to the duty of being a county planning commissioner. And so definitely we should have their input on how realistic that is. But I want to thank Eric for bringing up the fact that our commissioners, they're paid a stipend for the meetings, and it's very minimal. Their efforts we can consider as volunteer. Mr. Rose commented about the fact that there is a problem at the Planning Commission currently. Their time is impacted, and we need to address that. He stated that the Planning Commission needs more time to hear issues, those complex issues of large development projects, the complex issues of ordinance amendments and so forth. And so I think staff's suggestion on the surface to maybe take some of the more routine things away from the Planning Commission and give them to the Subdivision Review Board or to a hearing officer, again, on the surface makes sense. But as Mr. Rose said, that would not necessarily give the Planning Commission a lot more time. So maybe that isn't a complete solution. Maybe it's a partial solution. And it was mentioned by several people that doing what staff had suggested here would have significant financial impacts on the county. Well, holding another planning commission has very substantial financial impacts on the county as well, because they are publicized. We have AGP video here, and there's a fixed cost to hold any meeting in this chambers, and we have to keep that in mind too. So it isn't necessarily the most cost-efficient means, but I don't think that cost is the underlying issue here. The underlying issue is that we have applicants waiting 4, 6, 8 months or more for an opportunity to have their project heard before the Planning Commission. And it takes several hearings to get an ordinance amendment through, and we do it in short bursts, and so there's a lot of inefficiency there. So absolutely, we do need to improve the process. And I want to thank all of you who are still here and those that may be listening that came and left for their suggestions. We've heard a lot of good input today. I think this was a very valuable hearing, and it gives staff some other ideas to pursue. And so I think we should stay on the path of addressing this issue. I want to see staff devote the time to continue through this process, because this process itself will be time-consuming. But it's addressing a problem that's real, that exists currently, and we need to resolve it. So thank you for your input and your participation today, and we'll see how we can move forward. Supervisor Gibson, and then Supervisor Ovitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if we could try to craft some staff direction here.
That's what I was going to do.
You want to?
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
My thoughts are this. First of all, I think at this particular point we need to take the information today. I would like to do that review committee, but I would like to make it up a very small group at this beginning stage, which is probably two from the board, two from the Planning Commission, and two from staff, being the planning staff. And that those people meet between now and October the 14th to put together either a list of improvements or a white paper, whatever you want to make that terminology, and that we plan at least an hour's worth of time on our strategic meeting on the 14th to discuss that.
On October 14th.
On October 14th. So that would give us pretty much the last of October, and I mean the month of September, to kind of detail us down more than what was. That was the biggest thing I heard today, was what kind of detail we wanted to. So if that's amenable with the board, I just put that in form of a motion.
Okay, and if I may, Supervisor Ovitt.
I'll repeat it for the staff.
Well, we need a second, and then we can discuss it.
Yeah,
okay, it has been seconded. And Supervisor Gibson had suggested originally that we include someone from the, you know, building industry, somebody that's, I think you had made that comment, and I'm wondering if we want to do that with this.
I wanted to clarify that possibly what we look at is in the board and the Planning Commission, that we stagger so that we get a different view, north, south, east, west, however you want to do that. I don't have anything, but when I'm going to go say,
let's bring somebody in building industry, then I'm going to have somebody from the environmental side, I'm going to have all these different groups they're going to want to go into. And I think what we need to do is a quick and dirty realization and then bring it to the strategic meeting, which is an open meeting, and then allow us to kind of digest whatever that recommendations. And then if we need to go out farther, do so. And I think we can take suggestions from various different organizations and then input that.
And I
absolutely.
I mean, most of us have heard from both sides on this issue in terms of issues.
Yeah. Okay. Supervisor Linthal has a comment.
I just want to add, I concur as a second Supervisor Ritchell's motion of having six people. I think that's a workable group. You'll come back with the information, and we can carry it on from there. I don't see a need to add more people to that group at this time.
Okay. With that, then, I'll
agree. Let me, if I could just expand. I think,
absolutely.
And
Supervisor Gibson.
Can Bruce be one and I be the other one?
Since
I've been accused of hitting him on the side of the
head. Yeah, really. Yeah. You know, we have some stuff to work out here, Mr. Chairman.
Turn the other cheek, Bruce.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that, Supervisor Linthal. I've learned my lesson
now
there.
Jim can get the other side.
Yeah, right. Somebody will, I'm sure. I heard Harry say something that's important. Is that I think let's get some ideas. Let's get the scope of what we want to do out for the 14th. That's a public meeting. I think beyond there, that then we go further afield with that to the development community, the environmental community, the advisory councils. And the Planning Commission, I think they ought to put their thumb on a few minutes of the 11th of December for, an open, full commission meeting of that. And I think we're going to then start the process so that I would expect that early next year we can have a set of things that we could do administratively that would help. And if we do need ordinance amendments, we could narrow those and focus those with wide consensus coming in. That I would hope we could authorize, process, get them in, get them through the Coastal Commission, and get on with our lives.
Speak again.
Yeah,
okay, Supervisor Linthal and then Supervisor Seisman.
Under discussion, I would just add that if part of Supervisor Owitt's motion was to have himself and Supervisor Gibson be the two participants, I would certainly second that, and I think it's a little housekeeping thing that we can take care of right now. And
sure.
It may be better done now rather than a later discussion.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea.
If you want to amend the motion, I would. And then let the Planning Commission determine who they
exactly.
would
like. Yeah, absolutely, and staff certainly can decide who they want to be there. Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Did you want to comment, Supervisor Sajjan?
I was until Supervisor Gibson brought into Coastal again, and I just want to give a sense of caution as our coastal, not that everybody's backyard is as sensitive as the other person's, but I think the coastal has a little more sensitivity than the inland. And approach it very carefully because it's not just our decision, and it's going to open up a whole new process, if I may call it, can of worms, to yet go back and require an amendment to our LCPs. If we can live with it as is, I'd rather keep the coastal LCPs as is.
I think to this point, you know, it's the old thing is problem solving. First of all, recognize you got a problem, and then kind of put together where you think you want to go with it, set a plan of action, and then
we could find solutions that don't require an ordinance amendment.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's
right.
What
probably I think the best way to solve the problem is give ourselves
you don't ignore
only
it,
3 minutes to speak, and then the problem is taken care of.
Okay.
I wouldn't need
in
that.
English.
I wouldn't need that much, Supervisor.
Okay. So we do have a motion on the floor, and it just requires a voice vote. So I'll call for the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And before you exit the chambers here, Supervisor Ovitz spoke of a meeting on October 14th. That's a strategic planning session. It is a open public meeting, but we use these strategic planning opportunities to focus on individual issues. And we also have one scheduled for September 2nd, the day after Labor Day, where we will be speaking about planning issues. We'll have up to a 3-hour hearing to talk about a more global approach to, basically get an update and an overview of what the planning department is doing relative to a variety of land use issues. So mark September 2nd on your calendar as well as October 14th for strategic planning session. And again, thank you all for being here this morning. We are going to adjourn to closed session, and after closed session, we will adjourn for the day. So I'll open it for public comment on items on our closed session agenda, and it looks as though Mr. Greening has a comment on closed session.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Greening.
I am Eric Greening, and I thought I heard at the beginning of the day that an item relative to Da Silva versus the county had been added to the closed session agenda. And I just want to remind your board that you may have received some last-minute correspondence from the appellant. Neither the fellowship, the Unitarian Fellowship, Universalist Fellowship, nor the public had seen that correspondence. And I did ask on the record at that hearing if there were any new issues raised by that correspondence, and the appellant was given the opportunity, if he wished, to raise those issues, and I did not hear any new issues raised at that time. So I just wanted to clarify what is in the administrative record going into wherever this may be going next. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. McNulty, can you respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. The Da Silva case is one that we will be discussing in closed session. I think that's probably the appropriate place to talk about it.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I have no more requests to speak. And Mr. Greening, could you do us the pleasure of...
What's the number on the item?
Closed
session.
Yeah. Okay, with that, again, thank you all for coming this morning and being a part of this conversation, and we'll adjourn to closed session.
How long are we talking? Are we okay?
Madam Clerk, can you fix that, please?
I'm working on it.
Madam Clerk?
No, no.
Neither one of us right.
Okay, I'll call a meeting to order. Mr. Jensen, a report out of closed session, please.
Yes, the board did meet in closed session on some of the items on the agenda. No final action was taken, so no further reports required.
Very good. Thank you. With that, we will adjourn. Thank you, gentlemen.
Wow. Hasta la
vez. Thank you. Anytime. That worked out really good. Were you guys really done just now, or just...
We're done.
That time.
40 minutes. Is that the new county council standard?